This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Noah. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Sometimes I don't ask why.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Just Rosero, and you're live here on this Monday evening, as always. Joining me and my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 490. Should have added up. Two. I was actually going to say 492 without even having to look. Of the longest running episodic, but a fucking gold standard. And speaking of gold standard, this evening we got three gold standards, the two of us, of course. And the third member of our trinity this evening is we are at the big time. We have finally reached the end of the big storylines. We are in March of 1988, and you know what that means, JR, the big show. And this one's very big.
It is.
But before we do anything, how was your weekend? Everything good? It's good to saw you at the beach, visiting, hanging out with our man Senior. Everything good?
Yeah, made it down to the beach, had a good day, did a lot of yard work yesterday. Power washed the house, did some fertilizing, some mowing, kept myself busy. How about you?
Roughly the same. We had the week off after last week's very successful Sword and Shield Golf Classic, and Place to Be Nation was a very generous sponsor. And we had a good day, and the week was well, and ready to rock and roll. And, you know, power washing the house and everything, JR, you know, right around the corner is you know what. We're only barely, 4 weeks away from,
We're getting close. You might be going out soon. You might be going out soon.
What is this?
July 21st.
Yeah, what's this, our 13th St. Mary's, I think? 13th?
05 was the first one, so maybe 14th.
14th, wow. It's going to be awesome. This guy's going to be...
No, 05 or 06. No, 06 was the first one.
06 was the first one. That was the one we had... We started, at like 2?
Yeah.
And it was like fucking 105 degrees.
We figured it out. We got a good cadence now. Yeah. So, looking forward to it, as always.
Yes.
Yeah, annual summer tradition here, Place to Be Nation. Otherwise, though, that's it. Of course, last night was Money in the Bank, so we had the crew here. Mm-hmm. Had some wings. That was fun.
Mozambique.
Solid show.
Silvano got his rock lobster.
Silvano was in the house, so we had the, get the rock lobster.
Excellent. We'll be bringing the third member of our team, JR, and let's dive in.
Okay. It wasn't the same without him here last night for the pay-per-view. He missed the wings. He missed the show, but I'm sure he had a grand old time on his own, and that is Mr. John D'Amato.
Good evening, PICs, and happy Father's Day to you, JR.
Thank you.
Looks like you had a great day. Yeah, sorry I missed it. Very rare I miss one, but I'll be there for the next one. And happy Father's Day to you, Scott. You take care of more misfit children than Justin does. A lot of people don't know. Between breastfeeding Armento and the price of... The price of cookies and that overpriced hellhole you live in. I had a lot of misfit children, so happy Father's Day.
Thank you, John. Speaking of a lot of children to feed, tonight, guys, we've got a show where there were a lot of mouths that needed feeding because there was plenty of human beings that were
putting all the slobs stuff in their face at the casino buffet, I'm sure, before the show.
Absolutely. For the show this evening, gentlemen. We have reached the end of the line of our big storyline involving the vacated World Wrestling Federation Championship, WrestleMania 4. And JR, I don't have the number in front of me, but what was our original episode number for 4? Probably like 22 or something, 15, probably something like that, 16.
Probably. I mean, there's only so many pay-per-views that we had some headlines in there, but yeah, I'd say probably the early... Tens,
yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Probably 10 or 15. 11 or 12, yeah. But of course, this evening, much different, much more involved, much more involved, and plenty more facts and figures.
Not involved!
Well, we're definitely booked on this evening. Obviously, you didn't watch this show live, JR. Johnny, you watched this live, most definitely, correct?
Nah, actually, I had to catch the replay on Scramblocity.
I believe
it started at 4. Times are tough. I actually had to work all day Sunday, and I think when I came home, I caught the end of it and of the live, and then I caught the replay on Scramblocity.
On Squiggle Vision. Yes.
Yeah. The days. By the way, so our original Versus 54 is episode 24 on April 23rd, 2011.
Wow. Episode 24. Wow, we did a lot between episodes. Because I mean, WrestleMania 2 was like episode 3. There wasn't that much stuff in between. Wow. Well, we had a lot of guests and stuff like that. So, I definitely watched this live. I went to my friend's house. He was in charge of WrestleMania, and I was in charge of SummerSlam, which we'll get to later on in our in the journey. But I remember definitely watching this live. All right. So the date, of course, was March 27th, 1988, live from Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Very different than the Silverdome. The attendance was in the high teens, low 20s. And considering we had 93,000 last year, it was kind of different. But I tell you, the camera angles, JR, definitely made it look like there was a lot of people there. I have to give
Kerwin
in the
game. Just under 20,000. Just so it's 19,199.
Okay, but I mean
that's a big drop from even if you call it 78. You know, if you want to go with the non-mark number and say right. 78, it's still, you know, 60,000 less people from WrestleMania 3, which is, I know it was by design, but it's still a pretty crazy drop off when you consider.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy, and
it still looked pretty impressive for an arena. Like you can spot like one empty seat, so it was
right.
It got the job done as far as that was concerned.
Well, the way it's laid out, too, it doesn't go up like a bowl. It just kind of goes out deep and, you know, far up, like the way it rises. So it made it look more vast than it was because of the way the arena is built.
Right.
And that long walk down those steps and everything.
But the crowd shot made it look like there was a zillion people there. Even though we were kind of full-blown in the closed-circuit realm, they were still in the pay-per-view realm at this time. Pay-per-view was pretty much full-blown almost for the most part. There was still a closed circuit here and there, and as a matter of fact, and this goes into the continued war between the World Wrestling Federation and Jim Crockett Promotion / the NWA, one of the buildings that Vince or that the company booked for closed circuit, the Omni, of all places, which is actually fairly funny. So, now, speaking of Jim Crockett Promotions, they tried to go a different route, and they did a free show on TBS at the same time as WrestleMania 4, and of course it was the inaugural Clash of the Champions.
And of course, this is all fallout from the Starrcade pissing match.
Yes.
Where Survivor Series went up against Starrcade and made the cable companies, you know, compete, and NWO is pissed, so this was kind of the receipt from Crockett.
Yes, and so it was in Greensboro, only 6,000 in attendance, but it drew 5-6 on TBS. Five matches on the card. Mike Rotundo defeated Jimmy Garvin in a singles match. The Midnight Express defeated the Fantastics by disqualification to retain their United States Tag Team titles. The Road Warriors defeated the Powers of Pain and Ivan Koloff in a barbed wire match. Lex Luger and Barry Windham defeated Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard to win the NWA World Tag Team titles. And, of course, the big match, Ric Flair defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Sting, and they went to a 45-minute draw. So that's what you got to see for free if you did not want to pay for pay-per-view.
And you do wonder how much it hurt the buy rate for Mania. You know, like, I don't know if it significantly damaged it. I mean, it's a 6.5. I'm not, you know, it's hard to compare. But
right.
I know I've read in the past that they felt it definitely took buys away. But I'm curious just how much it really dinged up, you know, what they were looking at for Mania by having that free show with Flair, Sting, such a big match.
I know. What do you think, John? I mean, smart booking move by Crockett here?
Yeah, definitely. Because Vince fired the first shot with the Bunkhouse Stampede Rumble with the Royal Rumble on USA. So,
well, even before that, Survivor Series.
Right. So yeah. So this is just a counter back and forth. And...
So, of course, obviously there was no other shows on this evening. WWF. Obviously, everybody was in Atlantic City. As a matter of fact, guys, Vince pretty much gave the company the week off. The last set of house shows were the previous Sunday, the 20th. Obviously, they wanted all the stars in Atlantic City, you know, during that week for promotion and that kind of thing. And, you know, sipping some of Gorilla's Joy Juice and, again, noshing at the buffet. And then I think they actually had a week.
Gorilla was a high roller at those tables. He's a legendary high roller at those tables.
Oh, absolutely he is. Oh, he must have been on cloud nine when Vince told him that WrestleMania 4 was going to be here. He's probably loving life. And probably, I can't find anything to do in Pontiac. But, yeah, he obviously loved being in Atlantic City.
Sure, he's there all week leading up.
So, yeah, and obviously from a fan perspective, you're talking about, you know, something kind of different because, you know, WrestleMania 3, you had 93, whatever, 1,000 people, and, you know, all diehard wrestling fans, whereas here... and as we would see a year from now when we get there, this was very almost transient. Yeah, you had your diehards, of course, but I'm sure you had your, you know, your high rollers who probably knew who Hogan was, and that was pretty much it. And, you know, trolling in and out. I'm sure obviously there were ticket sales, but I'm sure the high rollers got, I'm sure Trump had freebie packages and that kind of thing, you know, for the big, big players. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I wonder how much that hurt kind of the energy of the building. We'll talk about that as the,
Yeah, I think it's definitely an effect that you'll see when you compare it. I mean, there's moments, but I think it's a combination of things too, right? It's the ticketing, the crowd, but also the length of the show and the way it's set up. I think it all kind of crests together to lead to what ends up being just not the hottest night of action.
Right, exactly. JR, any other? That's all I have. Any other notes before we begin?
No, that's it. I think we're ready to roll. So Mean Gene welcomes us in. Gladys Knight comes out, sings God Bless America, sans pips, of course. You guys Gladys Knight fans, D'Amato? Is she on your docket of a million concerts this summer?
Pass. Okay.
Gorilla and Jesse then set the stage for the night, and Bob Uecker steps in to join us for the opener. And that leads us to our first match of the evening, which is the gigantic 20-man over-the-top rope battle royale. And there is a big trophy on the line.
Yes.
How do you guys feel about that?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I have to interrupt. I couldn't help but notice during the America the Beautiful, there was a certain individual that was singing the words to America the Beautiful or mouthing the words. Was he doing it correctly? there was a certain person that would become a pretty powerful individual.
Yeah. I'm guessing he probably butchered it. That's my guess. Or he just was stuffing his face with a hot dog or something at that point. All right.
He was right there in the front row. I couldn't help but notice he was singing along to it.
All right. Here are the participants in the match. We have the Junkyard Dog, News Brown, Bret Hart, Ken Patera, E. Brian Blair, Jim Brunsell, Jacques and Ramon Rougeau, Paul Roma, Jim Powers, Nikolai Volkoff, Boris Zukov, Hillbilly Jim, the Junkyard Dog, who I already mentioned, Danny Davis, King Harley Race, Jim Neidhart, Sika, Ron Bass, and George Steele. So a real who's who of nobodies in this one.
Yes.
Everyone who they pretty much felt bad leaving off the card, they shove in this, plus like four or five names.
And like half the tag division, pretty much.
JYD and Harley really fell off. Like last year, they had one of the top matches on three, and now they're stuck in there.
And it's interesting too, Scott. You mentioned the tag teams proliferating this because it's not a tag heavy show with the tournament. Normally, these big dirtier shows, we're getting like, you know, four or five tag matches. It feels like, but because of here, the way it's set up, there's only room for two tag matches. So yeah, they get the rest of the teams just dumped into here. Also, for the second time in 3 years, the Hoffman Nation's in a battle royal. At WrestleMania, they were in the WrestleMania 2-1 as well.
Yes.
Here they are. So the ring fills up. The Fink introduces everybody. You know, a drop for the Hearts, and like you mentioned, JYD and Race, John. And the Hearts are really aimless at this point, too. Showcase with some newer faces. The rest is just fodder. George Steele stands around at ringside. Uecker says, Vince, call them to be part of the show, which always makes me laugh. I get the call from Vince. It's a typical brawling as usual to start. Uecker makes his baseball jokes as everyone battles. Sam Houston gets dumped easily, and Sika goes right behind him. Jesse calls out Steele for just chilling and hanging on the floor and not doing anything. Uecker keeps going on and on about Vanna White and how he wants to finally meet her this year. Steele pulls Anvil out from the floor, eliminates him, and then both Bees and Ray Rougeau get cleared out as well, as we just kind of meander on. Bass gets chucked, he fights with Steele on the floor, and we get some argument over whether or not Animal was ever in the ring. Hillbilly is shoved out, Roma sends Danny Davis flying, Powers is out next as the business starts to pick up. Patera shoves out both Russians, but they pull him to the floor. Jacques is gone two, or down to five. Harley takes an ugly bump, and that brings us to our final four. Bad News Brown eliminates Paul Roma, and him and Bret Hart start to team up against Junkyard Dog, and that backfires quickly as JYD does what he can to hang around. Bad News and Bret regroup, pair up, and batter the dog, and then dump him out, and that leaves Bad News and Bret to celebrate as co-winners, of course, until infamously Bad News Brown turns on the Hitman, eliminates him to win. Bret attacks after the bell, wrecks the trophy, and then that's it. We leave with him standing tall as Bad News cries at ringside. Standard Battle Royale, I thought it moved fine. No one really stood out besides Bad News. I thought Bret kind of looked like a bitch doing what he did. And then, you know, he was turned on cleanly. Like, I get him being mad and you can jump him, but breaking the trophy and stomping around wasn't the best look. Fine opener. Nothing that really stood out, though, until the finish. I went 2 stars. It was good enough. We got these guys on the card. We talked a lot about the possible rebooking of the show a couple weeks ago, so we're not going to dive into that, but there's probably other ways that could have utilized this talent. But anyway, Scott, what'd you think of this?
Your official match time, 9:43, so pretty brisk about a Royal in that aspect. Bret Hart throwing a temper tantrum. Wow. Probably see that later on. Right. I don't know if Frost
I've
ever seen.
To come. Yeah.
It was fine. I mean, the commentary is fine. Gorilla and Jesse were just getting warmed up. Gorilla's first real big show since coming back from the health issues. But yeah, just seeing all the tag guys and we did see, as a matter of fact, at one point, you mentioned John Harley and JYD. They actually had a little in ring, back and forth with headbutts and stuff. And I said to myself, "Oh, look at that! They 1 year ago they were like the third match down on the card, fourth match down for the type for on the biggest show ever, and now here they are, harmlessly two fat guys, headbutting each other." So,
well, poor Harley too is all sliced up. Remember, he's already been injured by that table. So,
right,
he's gutting through this.
Yeah, no, he's in a lot of pain. Yeah, that's all I got. 2 stars, pretty harmless, John. Just a good, warmer for the fans as some of the joy juicers are slowly, meandering into the building.
Yeah, at least JYD, he made it to the final three. He was the last one that Britt and News dumped out. But what did you guys think of Euchre? His stuff didn't really age well. I love him in like major leagues, and I still love him. You still hear him on MLB Brewers games, even though a certain member of this crew said he was dead like 10 years ago. But he survived.
I didn't say he died 10 years ago. I didn't say he died like 6 months ago. I didn't say 10 years ago.
But yeah, his jokes haven't aged well. His jokes, I don't think his jokes have aged well. It was more Jesse had some good ones saying, it's not like baseball where you hit one out of five guys.
Yeah, no, Jesse really laid into him. I mean, he was fine, as a product of the time. You're right. I mean, some of his stuff is, it's corny and cheesy, but I think in the moment it was probably pretty good. I'm a Euchre fan. I liked him at 3. He's a little, I don't know, he's got some good moments here, but he's also a little bit more annoying on this one, too.
Yeah, like he says, when Hitman was destroying the trophy, Euchre says, "Oh, that's why I never wanted to win MVP, because somebody would have been jealous." I don't know. How is it? He was hitting this, more miss. But as far as the Battle Royale, it was a basic where, like you said, Justin, nobody really dominated. Everybody just got like one elimination apiece.
Yeah.
And you stole some of my thunder. Brett looked like a mope, just sitting around. And Gorilla even said, "Oh, what are they going to do? They're going to share the trophy? They're going to share the winning?" Like, he's celebrating like, "Hey, Bad News." All of a sudden they're best friends. It's not even like their tag partner. So he looked real dumb.
Yeah, he looked like an idiot. I mean, I don't know. We know where they're headed, so I don't know if it was supposed to be a preface for that, to kind of get them going. But, I agree. It just wasn't the best night look for him. It just made him look stupid all across the board. By the way, we didn't mention this is Bad News Brown's debut. I guess we haven't seen him yet. He was born October 22nd, 1943 in Harlem. Relocated to Japan, Alan Kogue, of course. He studied at Nihon University, majoring and minoring in judo. In 1972, suffered a severe injury to his knee in the Olympic trials bout with Jimmy Woolley, rendering him unable to compete in the Summer Olympics. He recovered, began training for 76 Olympics. He was initially excluded from the U.S. judo team until a class action lawsuit was filed against the committee by the U.S. Judo Association. Kogue won the bronze medal, and his victory made him the first African-American to win a solo Olympic Games medal in a sport other than boxing or track and field. Retired from competitive judo after 76 due to frustrations about the politics. Went on to hold a number of other jobs, including briefly working as a bodyguard for Aretha Franklin before deciding to train as a professional wrestler. He trained under Antonio Inoki at the New Japan Dojo in 77, debuted in October that year, briefly under his birth name before adopting the name Buffalo Allen. Made a one-off appearance in the WWWF in February 78, defeated your boy Scott Frankie Williams at a live event under his birth name, returned to the promotion January 79, wrestled for the WWF for the rest of that year, including episodes of Championship Wrestling, and late 79, appeared at MSG, teaming with JoJo Andrews. And in 1982, found his long-term home in Stampede Wrestling with Stu Hart, centered in Allen's adopted home city of Calgary. He remained there until 88 when he debuts here. So,
yeah. And actually, he's on some episodes of All-Star Wrestling on the network, and he had, like, the worst hair. Oh, my God. Johnny, we always thought Jose Estrada's comb-over was bad. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Where Allen Kogue got his hair done, but... He should get his money back from the guy in Harlem or wherever he got it taken care of because it looked pretty horrible. But if you want to see some early Bad News Brown / Allen, check out like the between like July and September of 79 on the network on All Star Wrestling, and you'll see some wrestle nothing like he does here, obviously. But it was interesting to see how guys evolve over. I mean, that was what 9 years before. Interesting to see how guys evolve.
Not to bring up a salty subject, but what was the deal with Justin's boy Steele? I mean, they introduced him last, and you know he got a decent pop, but it seemed like he just stayed on the ring outside the ring, and he was grabbing onto a couple guys' legs. Did he get? I missed it, or I don't know if I missed it, or did he actually get eliminated by somebody? Because they just showed him outside the ring.
No, I don't think he ever came in.
No, I don't think he did either.
Yeah.
No.
That was.
That was just.
I don't know why
check.
They even bother. Yeah, why not just announce him as a guest enforcer at ringside and let him mess with people as they get eliminated or something? I don't know. It's weird. And they talk about it in commentary. They're even confused, like Jesse and Vince and even Euchre. They're like, "Is the animal even in?" Yeah, I think he already went in. He was already thrown out.
Yeah.
You know, Gorilla says that. And then it's so much confusion over it. It's such a weird battle royal. And like you mentioned, John, like I feel like if they would have picked someone and let them run through this, it would have accomplished something. Instead, it's really just a lot of meandering around and pointlessness. Like there's no point to it. At least if you're going to put over Bad News, then just have him throw everyone out. You know what I mean? Like don't do this pussyfoot thing and then he sneaks one in on Brett. Just have him be dominant if you want to get him over.
Yeah, it was like, okay, your turn. Okay, you get to dump one, and then the next guy gets to dump one. It was they haven't figured out how to make one guy dominant. That won't come till years later.
All right, so Euchre leaves. He goes to find Vanna White as Jesse tells Gorilla he knows where she is and laughs. Fink explains the rules of the tournament, and Robin Leach comes down from Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous to officially kick off the tournament. Of course, we cover this in great detail. Before guys, the title on the line has been vacated due to all the nonsense at the main event, and Hogan and Andre have the bye, and the rest of the field will compete here in the first round. So I think you know we've covered this the build in great detail over the last few episodes here. So that does bring us to our opening first round matchup. That is Hacksaw Jim Duggan taking on the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. Pretty key match. Big pop for Duggan. Andre the Giant's out with Ted, and Gorilla gets all flustered over that. He is not happy to see him there. Jesse and Gorilla debate if DiBiase or Andre would step aside if it comes down to it, if they have to meet each other. What will happen? We start some feeling out as Jesse dismisses Hacksaw as just a brawler. Duggan hammers away with right hands, eventually knocking DiBiase to the floor. Duggan continues to dominate with strikes until he eats a DiBiase boot on a charge. Ted goes to work with strikes of his own, mixing in elbows and knees and punches, and then Duggan blocks a suplex and gets one of his own as Jesse says Hacksaw's champion would be a disgrace. Hacksaw heats up and levels Ted with a clothesline and a power slam, and he sets up for the three-point stance, but Andre reaches in and trips him. Hacksaw turns to tussle with him, and DiBiase drills him with a knee to the kidneys and nabs the win. This is fine, limited on time, so they can only do so much. I like the story here that Andre's paying dividends to DiBiase yet again. He'll play a big role throughout the night. And Duggan's really just a pawn for the tourney, but the crowd is into him, so good for him. So I went star and a half on this. John?
I went a deuce. This is about the best match that you're going to get out of Duggan. And DiBiase and him, they had all that history from Mid-South and UWF, so they carried it through here, and you just love DiBiase's timing. Right as Andre hit the punch, and he hits him with the knee in the back, like right at the same time. That was a good finish. Yeah, just little things like that sets DiBiase apart from everybody else.
And I think this is going to be a big night for DiBiase as far as in-ring, because we've seen a lot of character work from him, but we haven't really seen him have to, like, get in there and wrestle and tussle and mix it up. And, like, this is a big night. Like, he's going to go do this on his own if he wants to do it, for the most part. So I think it's big for him in that regard. We haven't had to see him go out there and win a bunch of matches yet. He's just tried to buy his way and talk his way to the title. So I think it's a big night for him on that level.
And also, he hit Duggan with a stiff one, because Duggan had some little blood from his mouth. That was before even the Andre punch. So they were working stiff.
I agree with you 100%, John, because when I see Duggan, I think of a deuce, too. The time of this match is 5:01, and I think it was a foregone conclusion. DiBiase was winning, obviously. Probably this match not as good as what they had back in their Mid-South days, even though Duggan still had his Mid-South tights on, the black tights and the white knee pads. I did like the end, and I liked how the premise. I really paid attention to that today, because obviously, just like you guys, this is probably the 35th time I've watched this show. So I was trying to look at different things than I've seen in the past, and I really wanted to kind of collect in my thoughts and in my notes DiBiase's advantage all night long. And really, it's Andre. I mean, his presence there, and obviously Gorilla harps on it the whole night. But I mean, he's the equalizer, and he's the extra advantage, and DiBiase. I mean, when you look at it on paper, this whole night was set up for him to win. They laid it out perfectly, and I know we talked on our last show about the different scenarios and how we could kind of remold this and everything. But at least to this point, and the way that they've been working it, DiBiase was lined up to win this thing, and you almost sense that. You know, you didn't know how the rest of the night was going to go, but Andre, I don't know if it tipped their hand on how his match would go later on, but I feel like he is full-blown, like, I'm just taking the check now. I'm all about the scratch. I don't even give a shit about the belt anymore, which you could say kind of kills the storyline a bit, because Andre was obsessed with taking the belt off Hogan and having the title for himself. Now he's just about getting the money. And doing that, I think, kind of adjusts the narrative to Andre just being a blunt force weapon. And I think that works out well.
That's an interesting point. And it's a good one, because when I did this show with Jeff on Jeff Owens Wrestling a few weeks ago, that was one thing he picked up on and called out, was like, and he was a little what, all of a sudden Andre, who's kind of had death in his eyes throughout this whole thing and wanted to take the title, now all of a sudden he's okay. He actually called that out on the main event and there, I think, is just kind of like, why is he now okay with stepping back and just kind of taking the money and bowing down to DiBiase? Why is he okay being a mercenary? And I think my explanation for it is he's no longer cares about being champion. Like, when this whole feud started, it was kind of innocent in a way, right? Andre just felt like he never got the title shot that he deserved, and he wanted a chance at the title. And now he's just become obsessive with killing Hulk Hogan, basically, right? So I feel like the story's actually advanced, and now he's just doing whatever he can to get the belt off Hogan and screw him, versus like trying to win the title. Like, it's become penal for him.
Right.
Well, exactly. Basically, he got his job done. He beat Hulk, although under extraneous circumstances. But he got the job done, and also the Bobby was pushing him in the past. So now Bobby's not really pushing him. So now he's got like a different boss. So he got his job done, and he's going to do what he's got to do for his new boss.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. No, I agree. And that's the narrative that you start to see as the evening progresses, that, you know, DiBiase is the one guy in this whole tournament that has everything laid out. He gets every advantage, and you see that little by little as the show moves on. The match otherwise, I gave it a star and a half as well. The match itself is, you know, it is what it is. You're going to see that a lot tonight. And we talked about the whole rebooking and everything, and we'll obviously get into, as the evening progresses, the quality of these matches, and did the storyline dictate that the work rate was going to suffer. And obviously we talked about that extensively with Kelly and the guys on the last show. Now we see it in full force. Like, DiBiase is a tremendous wrestler. I think we're all pretty comfortable in saying that. Duggan is, well, Duggan's Duggan. But you're going to see, you know, DiBiase kind of have to meander his way through it. And, you know, we know he's a better wrestler than that. And obviously, as we do here in the Vintage Vaults, when we talk about the house shows, and we really see the real rest, the quality of wrestler more there than we do here. So, I mean, that you take away from that. Right now, it's all about that belt that's on the little pillow. Although, one thing I forgot about, I thought he took it out at the beginning of the show. He didn't. He didn't take it. They didn't bring the belt out till the end. But
yeah,
I thought
they don't
show it till the
match.
Out at the beginning. But anyway, DiBiase gets the win in an average match, which is pretty much par for the course as we continue on this evening.
It'll be a trend. All right, so Mean Gene's backstage at Brutus Beefcake. He says Honky Tonk Man will never forget his name after tonight. He will be the new champion. And then Brutus has his blades ready for Jimmy Hart in case he gets involved as well. And then next up, continuing on in the first round, is The Rock, Don Morocco, taking on Dino Bravo. Big power match here with two deep, dark horses. One has a chance to move on, though, so when you're matched up against each other like this, it's a good spot. Morocco has superstar Billy Graham with him. The crowd's into that. Bravo has a slug Frenchie Martin with him, as always, worthless as ever. Jesse says Graham is saying, I'll be back lately, and Gorilla says, without Morocco, Graham would be in a wheelchair. Morocco controls early, slamming Bravo, but then slips off the middle rope. Morocco fights through it and works the arm. Bravo comes back with elbow drops. Gorilla says Bravo's improved under Frenchie as he gets a gut-wrench suplex. Gorilla trolls Jesse about the weightlifting record, as usual, as Morocco comes back with strikes and goes after the leg. He works that for a bit until he accidentally gets himself twisted in the ropes. Bravo pulls him over and spikes him with a nice pile driver for two. Morocco blocks a second one, then the two clothesline each other. Morocco gets a first, hits a flying forearm, but tries a second one and levels the ref by accident. Bravo hits a side suplex, but the referee wakes up and taps Bravo on the back and calls for the bell. Bravo celebrates like he won, but of course we find out it was DQ. And in the replay, we see that Dino Bravo had yanked the referee in Morocco's way. A sneaky, feisty little power match with some pretty good flow. Not bad for Bravo. Face Morocco continues to work well. I've been a fan of him since the turn. He worked hard. He's like a bull. I like the way he keeps going at people with his offense and kind of bumps around. I thought the finish was kind of confusing, but I thought the match was okay. Like, they actually threw some bombs, and it wasn't a bad power match. Like, we talk about guys like DiBiase being hurt by this format. I think guys like a Bravo and a Morocco are helped by the format because we're forced to have these quick matches, and they're forced to be sprints in a way. So it's helping guys like that not to have to go out there and fill 15 minutes or whatever, where we always see them exposed. So it actually looks okay because they just go in there for whatever it was. What was this, like 5 minutes?
4:54.
Yeah, so, and they're just in there tossing bombs at each other. So I didn't mind it, and I thought it was a good showing from Morocco, who would now finally, you know, he suddenly finds himself in the final eight for a shot at the world title. So I thought it was a cool little story for him. So I enjoyed it. What'd you think, Scott?
I gave it a star and a half as well. I mean, obviously we all know who's winning the Patera Award or whoever I think it's Morocco's own award at this point. Because he looks like ridiculous here. I mean, I know he looked big as we've been watching like these MSG house shows, but tonight he was full cycled out on this night. But I have to say that's a good flip of the coin on what I was talking about in the last match where, you know, long form work rate guys like a DiBiase and even the next two guys in our next match are long form guys who are good in, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12 minute matches. And then you have a match like this one where you have two guys who after 4 minutes are probably, you know, are heaving anyway. So this was a good chance to get their, you know, limited move set in of strikes and power moves and things like that. And it worked out fine. I don't know why Dino had to be protected here. I don't know why Morocco just didn't win. I don't know what the protection was there. But maybe because it's fresh after the Rumble and he's kind of the overheel with the powerlifting thing or whatever. But the right guy won, obviously, because you weren't going to have, the whole face-heel thing. And it is an interesting point there, John. Do you think that, I mean, I know we talked about jumbling the brackets on the last show, but did the whole face-heel thing kind of take away from the suspense of these early matches, do you think? And maybe they just needed to kind of be creative with the endings, which is why we had all these wonky DQs and all this kind of crazy stuff. To at least give us creative endings, even though the endings themselves were predictable.
Yeah, they should have at least had like one heel match. Like we remember back to the Wrestling Classic when I think it was Orndorff and Tito were both faces, and they kind of went at each other. They should at least have a little something outside the box right here. Yeah. But
I mean, I'm fine with Dino Bravo not winning. But
no, I am too. I'm okay. With that. I am too. I'm just saying that the fact that they just kind of went.
But
down
no,
the line
I agree with you guys. I agree with you in theory. I think we'll see one coming up where they probably could have just done face face. But I think we talked about it last week why they didn't. But looking at the brackets, I don't think there were too many opportunities really for a face face when the way they laid it out. But maybe in the first round they could have done one just to mix it up. Yeah, you're right. I mean, just to be different.
Yeah, we discussed it in the build show that how maybe they could have done a Macho Steamboat revisit, but then we kind of came up with reasons why they shouldn't have, and it so kind of worked out, which was pretty much the whole show where we tried to revisit and the conclusion that it was booked pretty much as best as they could.
Yeah, it was kind of into a corner. So, all right, any other thoughts by either of you guys on this one?
Just Morocco came out on fire, and then after a hot couple minutes, he kind of flubbed. He kind of tried that dive off the second rope, and almost busted his ass. And after that, that was kind of a message to him that he better slow it down and just stick to a more like hostile match. And also Morocco, like 2 minutes in, he was looked like he was going through a hot yoga class.
He was drenched in.
Yeah, and it didn't even seem like it was that hot in the building. So
looked like Trent Williams watched. And then Alexa Bliss Monday night.
Oh, man.
And he'll admit it. All right. Anything else on this one?
Can't top that.
Nope.
All right. Go backstage. We were Bob Uecker's with Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart. He gives him some shit about their match tonight, and Honky was pretty funny here. He gives him a lot of crap back, take up on him about his baseball stats, which was pretty good. And then gets serious about his challenger tonight. He says he'll win even if he has to backstroke the Mississippi. I like this interview. I thought it was pretty funny. Euchre is the puncher bag. It's pretty good. That's how I like him in this show. Like, just Honky shitting on him back. It's good. All right. Our next match is Ricky Steamboat taking on Greg the Hammer Valentine. A nice spot for Valentine here, showcased with the tourney slot. Dragon's the toughest opponent, but he's been spiraling since late 87. He has his baby with him to gain some additional sympathy. Gets him feeling out early as Gorilla puts over that both can wrestle for as long as they need. Steamer works the arm and slugs away before getting two on a dropkick. Hammer comes back with some clubbing blows as Jesse and Gorilla talk about the favorites in tonight's tournament. Hammer keeps wearing down Steamer, grabbing near falls and laying in some heavy shots. Steamboat avoids a back suplex, runs Hammer to the corner, and then goes to the arm. Hammer then cuts him down to clothesline and works over the head and neck. We see Donnie Trump at ringside as Steamboat mounts a comeback and starts to nab some near falls. Hammer cuts him off and gets a stomach breaker and then starts to prep for the figure four. Steamboat gets to his feet and they trade chops until the hammer collapses. Hammer then gets up and gets a shoulder breaker, but Steamboat blocks the figure four with a shot. Steamboat gets a chop off the top for two, slugs away before throwing the ref out of the way. Steamboat goes up for a crossbody, but Hammer rolls through and steals the win. Now, this is a fun match. Some pretty good natural progression, smart work by both guys. It's a pretty rough fall for Steamboat over the last year, but he bows out here. This is his last match. Hammer gets a big win. He chugs on to the second round. I went 2.5, but it is a pretty inauspicious way for Steamboat to leave. You know, we've seen him do a lot of stuff, a lot of great stuff since he arrived in 85. He's been a stalwart for us in all these shows, but he has really faded quite a bit. Since losing the title to Honky Tonk Man, so you know, obviously one of the all-time greats in across wrestling history, but even in the WWF too, we'll see him for a blip again in a couple of years, and we'll actually see more of him, Scott, this time around, since we're doing some other stuff, MSGs and whatnot. We'll see probably a couple extra matches than we normally would see. But yeah, so it's sad to see him go. He fades quietly. He doesn't really get much of a... You know, he puts a hammer over on the way out. Let me ask you this, though, John, before you get to your comments. Do you feel that Steamboat should have even been on this card? Like, do you think it was worth his name value putting over Hammer and to help sell the tournament? Or do you think the slot should have gone to someone who maybe was going to be sticking around and deserved it? Like, did Steamboat deserve to be in this tournament if he was on his way out anyway?
No, it boosts Hammer up a little. It's a good victory for Hammer, so... But all the signs were there that this was Ricky's swan song, like he comes to the ring with his son and his wife and then kind of at the end it was real weird that he kind of waves goodbye to the crowd pretty much Jesse and Gorilla kind of just ignored it, so it was looking back on it it was obvious that he was gone after this. Maybe it wasn't so obvious at the time, but
He's advertised. Yeah. He's advertised for a few shows. Like, there's a couple of house shows, Providence on April 23rd, and there's a couple that was canceled. Another one April 25th at MSG. So I think those were he was probably booked originally, but he had to have known prior to this, I would think, or right after. So I just didn't know if it was worth, like, you know, giving this to somebody who maybe was going to be sticking around.
It was good because somebody had to take a rare pin because, as we see, all these DQs and all that. So it was good that somebody went over on a three count.
So just according to Wikipedia, it says, although television segments were shot immediately after WrestleMania, appearing that Steamboat would be facing Valentine in more matches, Steamboat left. So maybe he didn't know yet. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he kind of knew he might be on his way out or whatever, but maybe it wasn't official yet. Maybe, because this is what, March, what's the date on this?
27th.
Okay. And then it's a month later that those matches were still advertised. So maybe it was a couple weeks after this where he officially gave his notice.
Yeah, but Gorilla usually is all over him and gives him a lot of praise. He really cut down on the praise to Ricky, so they must know something was up. Yeah.
Scott?
Now I'm curious about no competes and stuff, because as we know, he eventually does. We might as well just say it now, since we won't see him again. He does arrive in the NWA in mid January. So I don't know what his no compete was, if it was 6 months or whatever. So I don't know if he even the reason I'm bringing this up is because we're talking about whether he knew at the time or not,
right,
that he was leaving, what the gap was in his contract about no compete and that kind of thing, because he doesn't arrive in NWA until January. So.
And maybe too, part of it was wanted to spend that time with his kid, like that he had, you know, gotten the time off for in the summer. So maybe he was just needed a break. I don't know. But I there's probably some truth to the no complete, because I don't think his contract was up. I think it was him leaving. So, yeah, it's January 89. He returns on January 21st. WCW show as a surprise partner. Eddie Gilbert against Ric Flair and Barry Windham. So.
Yep. I gave this match. Oh, John, did you do your grade? I didn't want to cut you off. Did you do great for this match?
John?
Did he leave with Steamboat?
Hey, so Alexa Bliss on Raw. He's getting sweaty.
Oh.
Two and a half. I'm done.
Okay. You went 2.5 seconds and you're done. No, I gave this 3 stars. I actually really like this match. I knew I was going to like it. Two of my favorite guys. And now our see how much time they got. They got 9:09. So that you knew that they needed, you knew you had two really good guys in the ring. So give them a little extra time over some of the other matchups, and you're going to get some decent, some solid wrestling. So smart there. To have them go a little longer, and I really like the match. And you know, it's kind of a dream match, I guess, for the mid-80s. Two guys, you know, two exemplary in-ring workers. Two different kinds of guys, obviously, you know, Hammer, a little more striker and kind of a grinding guy, whereas Steamboat's a high flyer. And I enjoyed the match. I wasn't sure who was going to win. Well, at the time, I wasn't sure who was going to win based on the brackets. And I know we talked about, you know, based on who's wrestling next. So at the time, though, I remember not being sure, you know, who was going to win. So this was the first match I thought that had a little bit of drama attached to it. I think we knew DiBiase was beating Duggan. With DiBiase winning, I think we knew Morocco was going to win.
Right.
But this one had a little bit of intrigue just based even on the next match. You know, you could have had a handshake thing. We'll get to that in a second, but
right. Yeah, I mean, you could, you know, we talked about it, but yeah, you could have anticipated maybe a WrestleMania rematch. Like, this is probably the one shot for it, but I think the reasons we uncovered a couple weeks ago speak to why they didn't do it. I really think the main reason, well, I think it's two. I think one, they were phasing Steamboat out and kind of didn't really want to reward him for whatever issues they had going on with him.
Right.
But I think the bigger issue is they really didn't want to split Seth's pops on this night. I think they just wanted to have him just have a clean path where they're not worried about him getting out cheered. And I don't think he would have necessarily, but why risk it for a guy that's not in your plan at all?
Right. No, I concur with that. So 3 stars for me and exemplary match. Best match of the night so far.
All right. Mean Gene's in the back with the British Bulldogs and Coco Beware. They have Matilda with them. They're feeling good, and Matilda is being prepped to hunt weasels tonight. Our next match is Randy Macho Man Savage taking on the Natural to Reed as the first round continues. Reed and Slick getting down to Jive Soul Bro. It's a great moment seeing them dance in the ring. The crowd fires up as Savage and Liz march out, decked in blue. Jesse talks about being a Savage backer and supporter for years as we settle in. Reed takes control right away with right hands and hits a suplex to cut off a brief comeback. Reed drops a heavy elbow for two and then knocks Savage to the floor. Savage climbs back in as Jesse talks about the next champion having to win four matches tonight. Reed keeps up with his punch-based offense, but Savage catches him with his head down and peppers away. Reed whiffs on a charge, but comes back with a nice clothesline. Reed heads up, but jaws with Liz as he's going there, and Jesse and Gorilla just chastise him for it. Savage jumps up, slams Reed off the top, and hits a big elbow for the win and pop. Perfectly fine match. There was some decent power strike offense from Reed. The ending was good, where Liz, you know, shows that she can have some kind of help or payoff, and Gorilla and Jesse just all over Reed and immediately backfires on him. Good selling from Macho and a lightning-fast finish that had the crowd buzzing. When he slams him and bolts to the top, the crowd just starts going nuts. And Savage advances. I just went sour and a half on this, John. It was fine for what it was.
This was the first match where you really noticed the crowd lull. When Reed was on offense, it's not a knocking sin, but that's just his style. His methodical and very slow, deliberate offense. Really, this is where you notice that the crowd kind of took that first nap. And that's what I got out of this most. But otherwise, it's just your basic two stars, and it gets Macho over with this finish.
Yeah, they dozed. But at the end, they woke up. Like, they really popped big for that. When they started to sniff Savage going to the top, they're like, oh, here we go. You know, they woke up for that.
But for Reed's offense, it was...
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely deliberate.
I mean, Reed's another guy too. He's on borrowed time. Is this it for him? Actually, do we see him again?
It's his final pay per view appearance. I don't know if we see him at the Garden or anything like that.
Yeah, I'll look.
We'll have to check Graham's site, but I'll do my comments.
No, this is it for him. Yeah, no, this is it.
Okay.
So, God, we can talk about where he goes after this in a minute. But
your match time 4:07. So a quickie for Savage. It was fine. I gave it a star and a half. It was what it was. Savage definitely. You're completely right, JR, about the energy level staying with Savage. As great as a Steamboat Savage rematch would have been, you didn't want that at the moment. Even though Steamboat was ice cold, he would have still had his fan base cheer because he's just a natural babyface. So unless Savage really, you know, jazzed up the whole, you know, babyface friend kind of thing. I think you're right. I think that would have neutered him, and that we couldn't afford that tonight. So good call there with that point. Otherwise, match is what it was. Butch Reed has definitely wore out his welcome, and I think he was kind of, I think he just, you know, whether or not the rumors about June 87 and missing the house show and all that jazz hurt him, I think he felt that greener pasture would have been fine in Crockett. So, yeah, it is what it is. It does set up a Savage Valentine quarterfinal, which I remember. Mm-hmm. I remember my brother and I getting pumped up about, and my buddies, because you know, we liked both guys, and we knew that was probably going to be an exemplary match. So that was worth looking forward to, even sacrificing a Steamboat rematch. But seeing Hammer and Savage, who I don't think ever were in the ring together, was pretty cool in its own right. So even though the finishes in terms of who won were slightly predictable, at least we were getting some really good matchups that you probably wouldn't see on a pay-per-view. You know what I mean? Like, Savage Valentine is something you would see, you know, on an MSG house show or the Spectrum or something, or Boston, but not on a pay-per-view, because, you know, pay-per-view, you focus on the big storylines, and a random match like this you wouldn't see. So I remember getting pumped up for this match coming up. So I was fine with I wanted Savage to win anyway. This match, but it did set up a good quarterfinal. So they were kind of laying things out to have some decent work rate matches here and there in this tournament, rather than just like express lining it. They did want to set themselves up for some decent in ring work.
I don't know if they cared about that. I mean, sure. I don't think that was their goal. We started the Wrestling Classic with these tournaments. I don't think they give a shit about quality.
I know. I thought maybe they set themselves up even unintentionally that we were going to get some decent in-ring work, because it was a long night ahead and we needed something to entertain us. So
they never knew that Three Shots Rule would be reviewing it 30 years later. So. That was the last thing on their mind was friggin' match quality.
I agree. All right, so Butch Reed leaves right after this. He heads the NWA as Hacksaw Butch Reed resumes his Mid-South feud with the JYD, managed by J.J. Dillon, gets sold to Hiro Matsuda. Didn't see much success there. Loses to Sting at Chi-Town Rumble and then flounders around before he's paired up with Ron Simmons as Doom, of course. He's in WCW pretty much until 92. He's there until 91, takes a break, comes back in 92, and then pretty much just works the independence circuit off and on for a while. He actually even has matches in 2011. Was his last match of his career. So, you know, on and off. Never really resurfaced the big time. He had one cameo in WWF and WWE, I should say, in 2007. But other than that, really never appeared again, like on the main stage. He is part of the class action lawsuit against the WWE regarding concussions, litigated by attorney Konstantin Kairos. So there you go for Butch Reed. So we go backstage again. Bob Uecker is obsessing over Vanna White. He has a chat with the Islanders and Bobby Heenan. Uecker trolls them too, but Heenan gives her right back. They have a surprise plan for tonight to help them win the match and avoid any potential issues with Matilda. Back to the ring as the first round rolls on. Our next match is a big battle of the Hosses, and it's Bam Bam Bigelow taking on the one-man gang. Bigelow's in his backyard here, and we talked about a couple weeks ago battling that knee injury as well. Gang and Slick ready to rock as Bammer and Hump chug out to their funky sax music, which I enjoyed. Gang attacks at the bell. By the way, I feel like Bigelow's had different music every time we see him. They're never the same. It's always some random different song. Gang attacks at the bell and slugs away with hard shots. Bigelow's rattled as Gang works him over while Jesse makes fat jokes about Gorilla. Bammer comes back and sneaks the cartwheel and hits a crossbody for two. Bammer drops a hard headbutt and keeps punching away Gang before hitting a second headbutt. Bammer hits the ropes but Slick yanks on the top rope and Bigelow lands hard on the floor. Bigelow climbs on the apron. Gang meets him at the ropes and punches away until Bigelow gets counted out. Another confusing finish here as he's kind of half on the apron. And he's ducking his head in and ducks it back out. It's all confusing. And kind of an upset. I thought Bigelow really was a dark horse heading into the tournament, but he goes down early, and it shows that he's fading as well. Decent power spots, but never really progressed until the blah finish. Gang advances in a shocking win. Bigelow's really cooked. Potential top star, and his push has just evaporated completely, which is too bad. So I just went with half a star on this. Really wasn't much going on. Really one of the worst matches of the night. We're not done with Bigelow, though. We will see him again. But anyway, that's that one. What do you think, Scott?
I gave it a half star. And, yeah, it definitely seemed like Bigelow's heat had cooled considerably. This is his last big-time appearance. Like I said, we will see him again here on the show. But this is it for him in the big stage for quite a while, almost 5 years. 6 years, almost, really. It was a mild upset because Gang seemed like a guy, you know, that was just there to fill the gaps. Because the next match, you could have gone either way on. See, that was the real intrigue in terms of the quarterfinal match were this match and our next match, because you could have mixed and matched the heel face thing and had a pretty good match probably either way. So did this kind of tip the scales later on? Perhaps. But really, I mean, the match, your match time, I think, was 3 minutes even. Yeah, it was only 3 minutes. So this was a get him in and get him out kind of thing. And for Slick to have such power to be able to flop a 360-pound guy over the rope. How sad is Bigelow that Slick was able to pull the rope down that much to be able to have Bigelow lose his balance speaks volumes.
You can tell they were clearly just trying to rush this or Bigelow's. I mean, if his knee was bugging him that much, so they really don't fuck with him too much here.
Right, I agree. Yeah, I got nothing more, John. Star and a half for this one.
Yeah, it's so sad to see from Survivor Series in November to 5 months later, where Bigelow goes, it's sad how they botched him. That to me, it was a mistake putting him in there with like Andre and Gang and these giants, because Bigelow he's got the width, but he's not that tall. Right. So he just looks like a short, pudgy baby face to these guys. Yeah. If you put him in there with like Reed or other heels that are the size, he could do cartwheels and you know, his big splash will be more impressive. His size will be more impressive, but his size is not impressive when you put him with guys like Gang and stuff. He just looks like shorter, short and fat. So, and also putting him with Humperdinck was another disaster. Babyface managers, unless they're hot chicks, are a disaster.
So. Well, and the other thing, too, is, and I've, you know, the more we watch 95, Scott, and then here, I think Bigelow's his look, I'm not saying him as a worker, but his look is just better suited as a heel. Like, as a top face that we're supposed to get behind, just that, the tights.
Yeah, especially at that time with the tats, you know, like he's you know, a rough biker type.
Right.
With the tats on the head, that's definitely screams heelish.
And I think he should have worn, like, either jeans or tights with, like, a jean vest or, like, a tank top. I don't know, like, something. Like, I feel like that those... The tights he has are just kind of goofy looking, like with the flames and the leotard. He just, you know, he's just got a weird.
The whole setup is goofy. I mean, right. You like the music. I hate it. And with Humperdinck, it's all good. And then he's supposed to be like an ass kicker. It's just
right.
It was botched.
Yeah,
and even you know, we see it in '95, and Chad and I are talking on the tail end of it on the Warzone podcast. But he, I just don't think he was ever really suited to be a top babyface. I think he just had a heel look. I think as a face, he looks just kind of goofy. Like, in 95, you see him with Diesel and Shawn Michaels, like these two, you know, good-looking dudes, and then you get this fucking ugly slob. It's like, you know, the cool kids in the neighborhood are forced to hang out with the little brother or whatever, that's this ugly muck, you know, just, like, hanging around. And his look is just better suited as the heel. He just is. Like, he just looks like a fat little clown as a face. But and I don't think that helped him here. But again, I agree with you, John. Some of the booking is questionable, too.
Okay, Scott.
Yeah, no, it's I gave it a star and a half. Same thing, like I said. But what we see next certainly makes sense for what they were thinking about later on down the line. So why don't we get to our next match, or do we go back to Pervy Mean Gene?
Or Sexy Bob? We do go back to Pervy Mean Gene. He's with Hulk Hogan, who's ready to get back his title, defeat Andre the Giant yet again. He also tells a wild story about, this is one of his iconic promos, the earth busting upon sinking the ocean, but Hulk Hogan will save Donald Trump and his family because they're Hulkamaniacs, and I'll help them dog paddle to safety. Or they can hang on to Hulk and he'll backstroke them, and he does this, of course, his backstroke off the screen. A classic, very surreal promo, especially given today's nonsense. You almost wonder if you should just let him go in that earthquake. But all things considered, he saved him, I guess, in his fanfic. So there you go. But again, a very iconic Hulk Hogan promo, one of his most famous. And that brings us to the final match of the first round, and that is Ravishing Rick Rude taking on Jake the Snake Roberts, two guys similar looks and builds. Jake Rude is still finding his footing and ready to really deliver in the ring. We get a big pop for Jake, who's laser-focused as he heads to the ring with Damian. The crowd is really firing up DDT chants as Rude controls early, slamming Jake a few times. Jake comes right back with some slams of his own and then some punches as Rude freaks out when he lands near the sack. Jake works the arm as Jesse says Bobby makes up for Rude's lack of experience. Rude breaks free and works the midsection but eats a knee. Jake tries for DDT but Rude bails to the floor. Jake goes back to the arm but whiffs on a knee lift and crashes hard to the mat. Rude gets to work with kicks and punches and grabs a chin lock, which he keeps hooked on for a while. Rude mixes in some offensive strikes, gyrating between chin locks as Bobby implores him to pick up the pace. Rude pancakes Jake and then heads up top and hits a fist to the head, but gives a lazy cover for two. Back to the chin lock and more stomping and forearms whenever Jake breaks free. Rude can't put Snake away. He goes back to a chin lock as the crowd's really starting to turn on this one. Jake finally breaks free and forges a comeback, rattling Rude with a backdrop and a short clothesline. The crowd wakes back up, but Rude blocks a DDT and then eats a boot on a charge. Jake follows with a stomach breaker for two, but Rude comes back with a back suplex for two. Gorilla and Jesse wonder if we're close to the bell, and a draw could be happening as both men wipe out each other with clotheslines. Rude goes for a pin with his feet on the ropes, but the bell rings for the draw. I thought this started well, but it really fell apart late as they ate up time. The crowd hated it, too. They protected both men to save some time in the car, but they should have just done a hot brawl, double countout, because they got a feud anyway. Why not just let them brawl to the floor and just really destroy each other? Instead of just what we get. One-man gang gets the bye. Neither guy goes anywhere. I gave this a star and a half just because I think there's some decent stuff in here. It ends up being the longest match of the night, too. On a night filled with short matches, pretty much. One of the few long ones. Disappointing. And again, I think and it's you know 15 minutes. One of the few. I think it's only one of two matches that are in double digits. So disappointing, which again for Rude continues to not impress for me. I've yet to see a good Rude match since his arrival, so we'll continue to track that, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. And he says the official time's 15:15, but, I mean, the 15 seconds is irrelevant. This match is perplexing because when you're because the whole point of this is you're talking about speed. You're talking about, you know, draws and disqualifications. Anything that involves both guys takes you out of the tournament. And every other match, except maybe the Steamboat Valentine match, was all about quick strikes and pins, getting the job done. Why we're doing long headlocks and weird submissions and I mean, the only thing that made any sense was Rude ducking out of the DDT. And other than that, it's like, why are they taking so long? Why? What's with eating all this time up? Obviously, for storyline, we know why they did it. I mean, that was clear, but logically, it made no fucking sense whatsoever. Made zero sense. Zero sense whatsoever. And it gave One Man Gang a bye, and both guys got knocked out, and, you know, it just made no sense, John. The pacing of this match. I gave it 2 stars. I was probably being a little generous, but it just made no sense why these two guys had to wrestle that kind of match when literally the point of this for 15-minute time limits for this first round is to get in and out as fast as you can, and instead we're doing headlocks and chin locks and all this stuff, and just logically the storytelling made no sense, which is no, weird for a Jake match.
And I really think the best bet would have been like 6 minutes, hot brawl down, up the aisle, and that's it. And they're both countered out. Like, you know, why do we need the draw? Why do we need the draw? It's a long enough show. Do we need them to go 15? The only thing I think of is they want to just get the concept over and say, oh, look, you can't have time limits in this first round. But at that point, who gives a fuck with this many matches? Just let them brawl and get start their feud on a hot note.
Yeah, you guys hit all the high points at this stage, especially with that Bam Gang mess. These two back-to-back were real crowd killers. And it's sad because it started off hot. Jake was on fire, you know, with slams and clotheslines. And when he signaled for the DDT, the friggin' crowd erupted. But I don't know who to blame on this, whether they were told to go to the time limit draw and keep it slow. But as you pointed out, Justin, so far Rude kind of kills every match with that reverse chin lock. He kills about a good 6-7 minutes. I don't know if it's laziness that you know, he uses all his energy in the gym, but that definitely killed this. And the crowd wasn't having it anymore. They were loud, boring chants, which is kind of embarrassing. These are supposed to be two of your top stars, but you guys hit all the points. A 5-minute double countout, double DQ, or something. That would have been the move, but didn't happen.
Yeah, Rude. Yeah, he really hasn't shown anything, even beyond the chin locks. His offense has been kind of blah. His bumping is pretty good, but I'm still waiting for the big Rude match to show itself. It hasn't yet, so we'll see. We go backstage. Gene and Vanna White are running through the updated tournament tracking. Vanna makes her round 2 predictions. Gene, of course, is the perv as always. We then head back to the ring for
our
second.
I just have to say it. 30 years later, sometimes you see women from the 80s and. You're like, you know, I can't believe people went crazy that they were so hot. But Vanna White definitely holds up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How do you say, what's the magic word, Justin?
A little hachimachi?
Yeah, a lot.
A little hashmash.
I was kind of like Trent watching Alexa Bliss. looking at Vanna, she looked very well.
She turns your letters, huh?
Yes.
You want her to go down in your vowels?
We could go on all night.
She was definitely, she definitely was gorgeous then, and it holds up very well. So good on her. And I think even today, she's still pretty good looking. So she's got the jeans, that's for sure. All right, our second non-tournament match of the night is up next, and that is a big power match between the Ultimate Warrior and Hercules. Interesting on paper, Warrior making his WrestleMania debut. Charges down the long aisle to a big pop and his rock music as Herc and Heenan await in the ring. We open with a power standoff as the two bang into each other and lock up to no avail. Trades clotheslines as well. Warrior botches the stun gun. Jesse questions Warrior's tassels. Herc backdrops Warrior to the floor and he gets dragged out and they trade blows until climbing back in. Warrior slugs away in the corner but Herc catches him with an inverted atomic drop. Gorilla jokes that about Heenan having no champions in his stable as Herc grabs the full Nelson. Warrior kicks off the top rope and rolls back. On top of Hercules, the referee counts, but Warrior gets a shoulder up at the last second for the win. After the bell, Herc chokes Warrior with the chain, but Warrior breaks free and chases Hercules off with the chain. This is real rough, real basic power stuff, and it never gets going. The end was messy. I don't get why Warrior didn't go over strong. I know they, I believe they wanted to take this around the circuit, but I mean, I hate that finish more than anything. It's so confused, so stupid, and we don't need fucking Ultimate Warrior winning by getting a shoulder up on a bridge. Like, is that really necessary? Just have him win, or have him, whatever, have Herc hit him with the chain for the DQ, something if you want to protect Herc. But I think Warrior could pin Herc, and this still works around the circuit. Have Hercules hit him with the chain after or something. He could take a loss. Not a very good showing for either man. Very disappointing for Ultimate Warrior's first WrestleMania match. I went half a star on this, John.
Yeah, definitely. That was their mindset at the time, that have a disputed finish so they could build up a bunch of matches around the house show where you guys will see a better finish in the future. But not much to say about this. So this is the three Dudaroonies in a row between Bam and Gang and Jake and Rude and this. This is a real, definitely feeling bad for the crowd at this moment.
Yeah, your match time, 4:36. I mean, I don't know what anybody was going to expect out of this, to be honest with you. I think we were looking to get what we got. I mean, it is what it is. Two big power guys,
at least, power moves or something. But
yeah, it was kind of a mess, and I think this showed two things. Number one, that Warrior is still going to get over just because of the look and everything, but Hercules definitely needed some kind of change. I think the heel thing was starting to run a little thin, and obviously losing, it hurt him in the long run, and I think a change was due. As for Warrior, I mean, he's still over with the fans. I don't think anybody expected great shakes anyway, particularly in this match. He obviously was not that important on the card, so it doesn't, it's in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big a deal. But it was a fill to give Warrior on the card, and they obviously had big things planned for him and big things in mind for him. And it's just an opportunity for Warrior to be showcased and for Herc to take the loss. So win for Warrior, but obviously we weren't expecting much of anything out of it, and we didn't. So not much more than a star and a half for me.
Jesus, a star and a half.
It's being really? I mean, a half star. Sorry, I read that wrong. Half star. Not star and a half.
Say, fuck.
Yeah, sorry, I read that wrong. Half star, sorry. I looked at my screen wrong. Half star.
Yeah, star and a half would be pretty insane. Half a star, which is, I know, that tells you how bad it is that a star and a half is, like, jaw-dropping. But when you look at how this went and how the Battle Royal went, I think they would have been better off just having Warrior mow through everyone in the Battle Royal and like, have that be a signature or something in your moment. And then, whatever. You don't need anyone. You can put Hercules in the Battle Royal, too, and then maybe just take two of those guys. If you need another match, stick it here or something. But I also don't think they needed to open the show with the Battle Royal. Like, if you just start with the tournament, and then you don't need that extra match, right? Just have the Battle Royal here after the first round or something to break up the rounds. Or put it at the end, like before the tag title match here, and you put the Battle Royal before the main event. But I think I would have had Warrior just destroy everyone in the Battle Royal and win it. But looking at it now, I think that's the one change you can make that really improves the card. Eliminate this match and have them win that. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I'm cool with that. I think that would have worked.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we get a full recap video of a Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant's feud, and that brings us to the second round, but it's the first match for these guys who received a bye as the previous two champions. Our big rematch from WrestleMania 3 and the main event, and that is Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. Big bout here to open round two and a shrewd way to work these guys in. The feud is ultra-personal now as Andre is a full-baked heel. Hogan's out for revenge. Andre just wants to fuck Hogan, like we mentioned. Big heat for Andre, DiBiase, and Virgil as they march to the ring, all kinds of pissed off. Hogan power walks out to a big ovation as usual. We're set for a main event bout in the middle of the show. Andre attacks Hogan as he hits the ring, clobbers him into oblivion. Hogan comes back with three forearms to rock the Giant and then chokes DiBiase, who gets on the apron. He runs them into each other, and the arena's rocketing. Hogan chops away, and Andre tumbles back and gets tied in the ropes. Hogan tears off his shirt and poses while DiBiase and Virgil free Andre. Hogan then punches away and gets Andre to slowly fall to his knee and then tumble back to the mat. Hulk peppers elbows and gets two, but Andre chokes him to break it. And then Andre starts choking away and slugging away and then hooks on in a terminal bear hug as the crowd is trying to rally Hulk. And you know what, guys? something tells me this is a really good place for a break. Andre has that bear hug on. We're halfway through the show. What do you say we pause for a minute? We listen to other happenings here at PlayStation.com. When we return, we'll...
Hold on. I got to pause the VCR. Hold
All
on.
Right, pause it.
I got to find my room VCR.
Switch tapes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our trek to WrestleMania 4.
Oh, that's right. It's the end of the tape. That's right. Because.
Be kind. Rewind.
You ain't crazy. I'm going to lie more. What you're feeling, there's a reason. I wanna do right. Oh, gotta do right.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceForNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place for Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it because I'm on it.
Change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make.
All right, Nation, we're back taking a look at WrestleMania 4 from Trump Plaza in Atlantic City. And, you know, we talked about Alexa Bliss and fans of hers, and sometimes you think maybe they should be looking in the mirror before they say the things they say.
Sometimes the man in the mirror will tell you what you need to know. And, of course, the man who also was in the mirror this week in 1988 is Michael Jackson. That is the number one song in the country this week. And that brings us into our Pop Culture Corner with Scott Criscolo. Scott, take it away.
Thank you, JR. And, of course, this Billboard countdown came out the day before, Saturday, March 26th, 1988. And, indeed, Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror from Bad is your number one song, probably one of his most popular songs. At number two, a little Endless Summer Nights from our man Richard Marx. And that is at number two. Number three, the Rick Roll himself, Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. Number four, Out of the Blue by Debbie Gibson. Number five, a little Billy Ocean, Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car. Number six, former Go-Go, Belinda Carlisle with I Get Weak. Number seven, I Want Her by Keith Sweat. And I still can't think Keith Sweat had a song in 1988. At number eight, Father Figure by George Michael. Rocket by the... And number 10, Hysteria from Def Leppard, which was a huge album because it was, you know, Pyromania had come out like 4 years before, and it took many years for this album to get put together with the drummers losing, with Rick Allen losing his arm in the accident and all this other stuff. So that was a big deal when that album came out in 1987. And in 88, some of the singles came out. So Hysteria was your was number 10. So Man in the Mirror, your number one song for the week. March 26th, 1988. JR, two movies came out, both involving some fairly popular 80s actors. The first one is called Biloxi Blues. Very popular guy.
Starring the Mississippi Mud Matthew Pies, Modine? Logan Crossland. Oh, okay.
Matthew Modine.
Biloxi.
Actually, no, wrong Matthew.
Matthew Broderick.
Terrible. All right. A story centering on Eugene Morris Jerome, a 20-year-old Jewish Brooklynite. Drafted to the United States Army during the last year of World War II, is sent to Biloxi, Mississippi for basic training. While there, he returns to cope with fellow soldiers from all walks of life, falls in love, and loses his virginity in less than ideal circumstances, all while having to cope with an eccentric drill sergeant. Starring Matthew Broderick, Christopher Walken, Michael Dolan, Marcus Flanagan, Casey Siamazosco, Park Overall, of course, from Empty Nest, we discussed her a few weeks ago, and also features the song Chattanooga Choo Choo. So there you go.
Okay. And the only other movie that came out on this Friday, the 25th, another Brat Pack special, Johnny Be Good. It's actually got a couple of well-known actors in it.
Anthony Michael Johnny Hall.
Be Bad.
And Robert Downey Jr.
Make a man.
Correct.
He's as pretty as a picture. It's just like Little Richard. Ooh. No. No love, huh? Okay. Tough fucking crowd. Johnny Walker, Johnny Snake Eyes, the top high school quarterback prospect who's heavily recruited by many schools. His best friend, Leo Wiggins, thinks he should hold out for the best offer. His girlfriend, Georgia, wants him to go to state with her and get a solid education, but the colleges offer to buy him everything he could want. Girls, cars, cash, free room and board. One school even buys Leo a car, while another offers to provide him with male companions if he isn't interested in women. His coach, Wayne Hisler, who he can't stand, even tries to sell him out by striking a deal with one of the interested colleges to become the next coach. And on from there, starring Anthony Michael Hall, Robert Downey Jr., Paul Gleason, Uma Thurman, Jennifer Tilly, Robert Downey Sr. as well, all star in this football coming-of-age comedy.
So there you go. That was the two movies that came out on the Friday before the 25th. All right. We actually had no basketball games. The NBA was off on this Sunday. I don't know if they were being I don't know if it was because the NCAA tournament or whatever, but there was actually no games on this date. The Celtics lead the Atlantic, Pistons lead the Central, Mavericks lead the Midwest, and the Lakers lead the Pacific. So there you go there. The NCAA tournament, the 1988 NCAA tournament, made it to the regionals. So here are the four teams that advanced. In the East region, it was the number one seed, Temple. Richmond made it. The Spiders made a big run in 88. They upset the defending national champions, Indiana, in the first round and then beat Georgia Tech. So they moved on. URI, the Rams, who were an 11 seed, they upset 6 seed in Missouri and then beat number 3 Syracuse. So the Rams actually made it to the regionals, mm-hmm. As did the number 2 seed Duke. In the Midwest region, the number one seed Purdue moved on. They will take on Kansas State. And the number six seed Kansas, Danny Manning, Danny the Miracles, taking on the seven seed Vanderbilt. In the Southeast region, your number one seed Oklahoma, Mookie Blaylock and Stacey King, will take on Louisville. And Villanova, the six seed, will take on the number two seed Kentucky. And in the West, it would be Arizona, the number one seed, with current Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr and Sean Elliott taking on Iowa. And Michigan, the three seed, will take on North Carolina. So there's your Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. And finally, in the NHL, there were four games on this evening in the NHL. Your New York our Whalers defeated the Canadiens in Hartford 4-2. And the Rangers, Mr. D'Amato, lost in New Jersey 7-2 to the Devils. Red Wings lead the Norris with 90 points. Flames lead the Smythe with 101. So Mr. Nelson's Flames doing well. Montreal leads the Adams with 98 points. And the Islanders lead the Patrick with 84 points. And there is your pop culture report, JR. Here we go.
So Hulk Hogan breaks the choke, unloads a flurry of punches and clotheslines, but Virgil distracts the referee, allowing DiBiase to come in and drill Hogan with a chair. The Hulkster grabs it. He and Andre fight over it, both using it for a double disqualification. Hogan drops Andre the chair after the bell and then chases DiBiase, who throws Virgil at him in protection. Hogan suplexes Virgil on the floor in a real nasty bump. He just picks him up and lets him fucking fall. Hogan returns and slams Andre and then poses. This whole thing was shady. Hogan used the chair first. Like, I think he should have clearly been DQ'd. And both guys shockingly get eliminated. The fans are pissed. The finish, you know, makes sense. You can't really have either of these guys lose, but you had to get them out of the tourney. A rough way to go about it, but kind of a necessary path. The feud's really losing its luster. But I thought the match was fine. The heat's fine. The heavy blows, it never really dragged. But the finish and the shaky crowd really drop it. And the crowd has been diminishing every time. Like, the nuclear WrestleMania 3, pretty damn hot at main event. And now this crowd just didn't really seem too into it. To me, the spot of the match was Virgil getting that ugly suplex. So I went a star and a half on this. You know, they're trying. But it's just some of the magic is just kind of disappearing from this. So, John, what do you think of the match? And then what do you think? Are we diminishing returns on Hogan Andre at this point?
Yes, definitely. But I like what stuck out to me. I like Jesse and Gorilla. They really stepped up their game. They were kind of they kind of fell into the lull with the last three matches. But here they really perked up to let everybody know that this was a special match. And they really at the end they got over the double DQ and the ramifications it had for the tournament. They really got that over. And but the only thing was Joey Morella was the ref and. They spent all that time after three with the disputed Andre 2.5 count, but they never really emphasized that Joey Morella was the ref. And also, we'll see later on, there's other referees that they kind of get away from, which is interesting because in WrestleMania 3, that was a big thing with Morella. And also in the disputed title match, there was a big thing with the referees, and they kind of went away with those angles. And Hogan at the end looks like such a mope doing his pose. I know he has to pose. That's what the fans want to see. But he just got DQ'd, and he's got no chance to win the title. And he's all smiley, still doing his pose. So he kind of looked like a dope at the end.
I agree. And he looks like a dope and just – yeah, it's just not a good night for him, like any of it. Him and Bret Hart, like, I don't know, it's just weird booking. I feel like there's so many – we're in an era where they book themselves into lots of corners and try and protect guys. And on a night like this, with the tournament and all this other shit, like they're just not they're just stuck into a bunch of corners where I think they could have just afforded to beat some guys on a night like this. I get the Hogan and Andre one, but the problem is by this point, how many freaking DQs and shit finishes have we already had? Like – we're like at number five already, I think, of like, or four, or whatever.
And either. Hogan goes away from being like the perfect babyface, and he really starts ramping up the heelish tactics.
Right. Yeah.
Where he's like invincible because he's kind of like the fans are going to cheer me no matter what, but he really starts acting like a douche.
Yeah, 88 is the turn for him. We've talked about it. And we'll see how it plays out. That 88's really kind of been the turn for him is, you know, when he becomes a little bit more formulaic and a little bit more edgier in a bad way. But the what was I saying now on the? Oh yeah, so we had Bigelow get counted out. We've had Jake and Rude get the double count out. We've had the Warrior confusing finish. Was there one other one that was kind of confusing? Well, we've had the bad news.
The Morocco.
Morocco was confusing. Yeah. The Battle Royal was so we've had like six shit endings already heading into this. And now we get a double count out. And it's like, we're just like littered with non-finishes. And I get that it's telling
the
story.
See, even you got confused. I think that it was officially a double DQ.
Right, double DQ.
That's not a double count, yeah.
But it's all the same at this point, right? It's just like, how many
exactly.
of these, how many, and we still got more to come. Like, how many fuck finishes do we need tonight? It's just a show filled with them. So it's frustrating for sure. And why do you have to do five leading into this match when you know this is going to be the big one where they both get knocked out? So how about you don't do a bunch of those already? Just do it differently. And if guys get to lose, they get to lose. But, yeah, it's just a confusing night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – 5:32 your time here. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck the deal is here. Well, obviously, Hogan is not winning the belt. And that's fine. And that's the way it is. We know, obviously, the backstage reasoning why. But the extra posing, because that's the Vince way, as we've heard in the past – and it really, I think it does turn the corner for Andre character wise from a killer in the ring to just a big muscle, you know, enforcer guy. Because Hogan slammed Andre so much easier here than he did at WrestleMania 3. That was just another slam. And it, just all these baby faces just can't stand losing. And, I guess there was no other way to do it. I mean, we talked about this the other, on the last show where we kind of went around in circles on how to do this right, and there really was no right way to do it. The best you do is just have them. I mean, technically, in past DQs, it's whoever uses it first. Doesn't matter who uses it second. But for some reason, on this night, because they both used it, even though they didn't use it at the same time, and there we go. So they should have done something like where they were trying to fight for the chair and they both hit the ref or some kind of crazy stuff like that. But in any event, we get what we get. And that's that. And Hogan's gone, which I remember being stunned at because obviously it's WrestleMania. Hogan's supposed to win everything. At the time, we knew nothing about movies or any of that kind of nonsense. But it did look kind of odd. But again, I mean, there's really no other way to go about it. It's kind of it is what it is. And they're both out. And obviously that was the plan, seeing as who was next in the bracket. Now, it makes you wonder, though, like the manipulating by the front office, like DiBiase just had to have his bracket right under Hogan and Andre. It's like they knew that, you know, like you think to yourself, wow, how did he know that was going to happen kind of thing, you know? It almost seemed too perfect, you know, but anyway, a rough
match. Well, I don't think he was as
interested
in the bye. I mean, that was like a benefit, but I think the idea was that he wanted Hogan out of the path, right? And Andre was a sacrificial lamb to take Hogan out. So if he can't beat him, then do the next best thing, and that's just eliminate him and sacrifice yourself, Andre. So I think even beyond, like, even if DiBiase wasn't in the next bracket over, I think his goal still would have been get Hogan out, and I'll worry about the rest. So I think that was Andre's sole job on this night, was to get Hogan out by any means necessary.
Yeah. No, that's how it worked, and so Hogan's gone, but we get the posing. Let's turn the show off. We're done. No, actually, we're not done. It made it seem like we were done, though. And we continue the brackets. Now, with Hogan out, things are wide open now, aren't they?
They are, and there's some interested names left, so we'll see where that comes to be. Mean Gene's backstage with Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Savage says Hogan was cheated. He's never been defeated by anybody. He says nothing will stop him now. He has the momentum, plus the momentum of Hulkamania, driving him to go to the end and take it all. Next match up is Don Morocco, Ted DiBiase. Big spot for Morocco here. Just a win away from the finals all of a sudden. big spot. He chugs out Billy Graham, ready to roll. Jesse says DiBiase was brilliant as he sacrificed Virgil last match, so he'd be healthy and okay for this one. Morocco yanks Ted into the ring and starts to hammer away. Slams him down hard. Jesse's pissed at the ref for not letting Ted get settled in. Morocco gets two on a power slam and keeps clubbing away. Morocco's dominating as Ted has had no chance to catch his breath until he finally rolls to the floor. Graham forces him back in, and Morocco goes right back to work. DiBiase's finally able to use his legs to yank Morocco up and into the post, and then goes to work aggressively. Jesse thinks Gang is now the tourney fave as DiBiase works in some fists, elbows, and kicks, getting some near falls. Morocco gets a quick flash of offense, but Ted goes to the eyes. Morocco dodges an elbow off the middle rope and starts slugging away and dropping Ted with a clothesline. Morocco charges hard, but Ted catches him and drops him with a stun gun for the win. And Ted DiBiase is now in the finals for the WWF Championship. A hard luck loss and blown chance of Morocco, who really dominated the whole match and comes up just short. So he came real close to being in the final match. Nice win for DiBiase. And I like this one because he did it all on his own. There's no Andre. There's no tomfoolery. He went out there. No shenanigans. Not even a suit. Just went out in his tights and just beat down Morocco to advance. He was really focused and just did what he had to do. So I really like that part of, again, furthering DiBiase as a worker. Fun match with a good story. I went 2 stars on this one, Scott.
5:33 your time. Yeah, I gave this, my screen just flipped. Let me talk first before I get my grade. I think Morocco and DiBiase actually had some halfway decent chemistry between power guy and, in-ring guy. I think we all knew that we weren't going to get, a 5-star here, but, Morocco was really over and, He was going to give the crowd a sense of maybe, because now with a bye, it opened things up creatively because you don't really know. But at this point, I think the whole storyline was about DiBiase getting a clear path to the finals. I gave the match. Oh, there we go. I gave it 2 stars. I was just like you. I gave it. I thought it was very entertaining, and I liked DiBiase. Kind of now suddenly the trapdoor has opened and here he is suddenly in an incredible position beating Don Morocco and he's all the way to the final. And he did the stun gun and which I thought was a pretty good move. It was pretty, the leverage was pretty good getting a guy as big as him over and dropping him. I thought Morocco looked very good here. I think it was a good, I think it was an exemplary performance for him in this tournament. If you want to look at secondary guys that succeed, then I think he was a guy that came out of this tournament, maybe didn't become the world champion, but looked good. Crowd loved him. They have he's got legend superstar Billy Graham in his corner, so things look good for Morocco at the moment in terms of looking ahead, even though he did lose here. And but for DiBiase, obviously he just got on the highway and shooted off the next exit to the finals, John. But good match, good back and forth.
Yeah, to piggyback on JR's points, I love how they got DiBiase over finally, how he came alone with no Virgil, no Andre, and he came and he did it himself. Because this is his first pay-per-view wrestling. We only saw him on the other ones in vignettes, and his first match over Duggan, it was like he needed Andre to help him win. But this one really got him over that he's a serious contender. That he's not just a joke with the vignettes and the gimmick, that he could bring it in the ring, and I like how you guys kind of put some shine on Morocco's little face run here, which is Morocco was kind of abused by the PWO crew a lot, but his little face run here, he really tried for one last moment of glory, because we're not gonna see him too much, and definitely underrated. He worked hard. I mean, he always looks great. Even though it's a little enhanced or a little artificial, but he always looks great, and he did his job well. He put DiBiase over.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed this face run by Morocco. It's been good. his bumping, his selling, he's been really energetic. It's a complete 180 from his heel work toward the end. So it's been refreshing. I actually enjoy when he pops up on these shows now. So it's been one of the revelations of revisiting this time frame for sure. All right, the Uke is still looking for Vanna White, but he finds Demolition and Mr. Fuji instead. They're going to take down Strikeforce and win the titles tonight, as requested by Master Fuji. Gang and Slick come out to be announced as advancing to the third round, and then they leave. This always makes me laugh. Like, they make poor one-man Gang, who's like 400 pounds or 450 pounds, waddle all the way down that fucking ramp.
He got some cardio in.
It's good for him, but I feel bad.
He burned a few hundred pounds. He burned a few hundred calories. It's good for him.
He has to waddle all the way out there, wait, and then walk away. It's like, that's a fucking point. All right, that brings us to our next
match. Gotta get that tape to 4 hours.
Fill it out. That brings our final match of the second round. That's Randy Savage taking on Greg Valentine. Nice match on paper here between two of the best. Another good pop for Savage and Liz, who's now decked out in purple. Big chance for both guys looking for their first world title. Hammer lands the first shot, starts to pepper away at Macho all around the ring. Savage gets a flash near fall, but Hammer regains control and keeps laying in heavy elbows and punches. Hammer gets a shoulder breaker for two and then keeps laying the wood in and out of the ring. Liz is very worried as Savage crawls back in. Savage blocks a figure four, but Valentine is relentless and Jesse thinks Macho's off his game. Hammer gets a backbreaker for two, but Savage turns the tide. It moves quickly, flying off the top rope for an axe blow for two. Jimmy Hart runs interference and gives Hammer a chance, but Savage turns it and gets a suplex. But Hammer levels Savage as he comes off the top rope. Savage charges but whiffs on a leap into the ropes, causing him to slam hard to the mat. Hammer goes to the figure four again, but Savage blocks him and gets a small package and steals the win. Tough loss for Hammer, who, like Morocco, wrestled a great match, but gets nabbed at the end. Really close to getting to the semis. Good crisp work here. Tight little story, but really too short to become any kind of next level match. Savage survives and advances. I went 2 stars, John.
The point was this in the short time was Hammer got all his dominant moves in, and Gorilla and Jesse really emphasized how much punishment that Macho has taken, and will he have enough in the finals? Because Hammer got his signature elbow drops, and he went for the figure four and his clothesline. So Hammer got a lot of offense in the short time. Scotty,
I thought 2 stars for me. Your match time is 6:07, so decent little length. Perfect setup for Savage in terms of having to face just lock, stock, and barrel tough guys. Butch Reed, big, powerful guy. Now you got Hammer, who you know, gives no quarter. Just philosophically, the way this tournament's been laid out is perfect for Savage, because he's just facing one brick shithouse after another. And now look at him. Now he's got to face the one man gang, who's just been sitting there doing nothing. But this was a lot of fun, and Valentine even looked pretty good here. Another guy who came out of this tournament looking pretty good. He beats up Steamboat, gets the win, and now here he is, you know, gets a good match with Savage, but falls just short. This first round, this quarterfinal round, even with the, you know, with the screwy Hogan Andre ending, has had better matches than the fucking first round did. The matchups have been so good and very entertaining. A good in ring, which again I know is not a priority, but it didn't, you know, it's good window dressing. And now you've got Savage, who's gotten pummeled by two tough guys, and now he's got to sit and in the next round take on a fresh 400-pound beast. So storyline-wise, creatively, working out great for DiBiase in the top half of the bracket, while Savage is facing one fucking powerhouse after another. So, yeah, there you go. Ted DiBiase moves on to the final with the double DQ, while Savage has to take on the 400-pound-plus one man gang in the semifinals. But do we go back to the brackets, JR, with Vanna, or do we move on to the next match?
No, we do go backstage where Gene is with Vanna. They recap round two and preview round three, and Vanna, of course, plays dumb about who Bob Uecker is, so she has no idea. That brings us to our Intercontinental title match. Brutus the Barber Beefcake taking on the Honky Tonk Man. Big title match, big shot for Beef, who has worked his way up the ladder. Honky still hanging on his champ, his heat and whole package slowly diminishing week by week. Honky has Jimmy and Peggy Sue with him as Jesse bags on Gorilla's dancing and says Honky may lack in skill, but he has luck. Beefcake chops his way down the aisle to a good reaction as many are hoping he can end this reign of terror. Jesse rags on Beefer's tights and says hi to Terry Tyrell and Jade as we get settled in. We start to lock up, but Beefer quickly takes over and rattles with an atomic drop and then musses up Honky's hair. Lost my spot. Honky bails. Beefer continues to rattle Honky as the champ keeps bailing to regroup and catch a breath. Honky comes back and dodges an elbow drop and kicks away. Honky works a soft dog shit offense and gets an assist from Jimmy. Sets up the shake, rattle, roll, but then releases. Locks it a second time, but Beefer grabs a rope to block it and comes firing back as the crowd heats up. Honky begs off, but Beefcake grabs a sleeper. Jimmy gets on the apron, clobbers the ref with the megaphone, and Honky fades to sleep. Beefcake releases and goes to the shears, but Jimmy absconds under the ring with his bag. Beefer chases him down and drags him out and pins him against the stairs and cuts Jimmy's hair. Peggy tries to wake up the ref, but other officials check on the ref as Jimmy runs around like a maniac. Peggy douses Honky with water to wake him up, and they escape as Beefcake is restrained, the winner by DQ. Honky lives on as champ despite being dominated. This was not very good. The Honky magic is pretty much gone. It's on life support. Beefcake loses out on a big opportunity but gets some revenge on his old nemesis, Jimmy Hart. Short, choppy, and sloppy. I went 1.5 on this. Disappointing. And again, another fucking disqualification on this show filled with shit finishes, which is disappointing as well, Scott.
Yeah, I give it a 1.5. I wasn't sure what was about to happen here. I don't know if – I mean, Beefcake seemed like he was settled right in to become the champion here. He was really over. You know, we had transitioned out of Savage, established Honky finally, and he ducks away again. I don't know what that decision was and why they did that. I really don't. But I think that they just must have liked Honky in this role as a great heel champion, and I don't know why they didn't have the faith in Beefcake at this moment to just turn the belt over to him. I think he deserved it. I think he was getting better in the ring, obviously, over Babyface, but for some reason, instead, we get another shit finish. I don't know where these shit finishers are coming from tonight, but they're all over the place. And I don't know if they had a plan for Honky. I don't know if all the backstage shit we've heard about had happened yet. But I don't know, John. It just seemed like this was the perfect setup to hand on a platter a great match. And finally, somebody finally Honky finally gets his due. And we have a new Intercontinental Champion. But for some reason, once again, it didn't happen.
Beefcake is kind of like a babyface version of Honky. A lot of clowning and stooging. He's not a good opponent. These guys really don't mesh well. You need a more serious face if you're gonna go in the with the Honky, because Beefcake are almost kind of like out stooges him. After every move, he does a stupid scissors thing. Beefcake was just as annoying as Honky to me was. Definitely these two don't mesh in the ring. There's if you Google like 80s style clowning and stooging, this match will pop up with these guys. And as you guys rode into the ground, just the lack of clean finishes is really starting to wear down this card.
Oh, it's getting old. I mean, we've had 7 shit finishes, whether a DQ, the count outs, the double, the draw, or just confusion. You know what I mean? Like, so we're up to 7 out of how many matches have we had so far?
12.
So 7 of 12 have had confusing finishes. I mean, come on. On the biggest show of the year. Like, and I know WrestleMania is not WrestleMania yet, but it's WrestleMania, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to reiterate again. I mentioned on another show, but Brutus really got hurt when they had set up after WrestleMania 3 for a feud with Adrian. And he really got hurt when Adrian got canned. Mm-hmm. And after that, for the year since his turn, Brutus kind of wandered aimlessly going – do like Johnny V and the Hammer, so I think it really hurt his turn, and they just emphasized the stupid barber. You know, he cut Jimmy's hair at the end, but they emphasize the hair cutting instead of his in ring activity.
Right. No, agree. And it was just disappointing overall. So, and it seemed like at the time that maybe he was the guy that could have legitimately taken the title, but Honky lives on, and Beefcake fails in his big shot. So. Bob Uecker is looking for Vanna White and walks Andre the Giant. He talks some shit about Hogan losing, and then we get the iconic moment of him choking out Uecker with Bob making the funny face. So it's a pretty iconic shot for both those guys. Back to the ring. Non-tournament action. We have a big 6-man as the British Bulldogs and Coco Beware take on the Islanders and Bobby Heenan. Big grudge match here. Bobby wearing a padded dog catcher's outfit in a funny bit. And, of course, the Bulldogs looking for revenge after Matilda had been dognapped by the Islanders. The Bulldogs and Coco get a nice pop as they march out with their mini zoo in tow. Matilda goes after Bobby, and Jesse calls her fat, which I found funny. Dynamite gets off to a fast start on Tama, pitching him over the top. He returns, and Davey smacks him, but Tama escapes and tags Haku. Davey gets 2 on a crossbody, then slams Haku for 2 and follows with a crucifix for another 2 count. Davey maintains control until Haku pops him in the face and tags Tama. Davey quickly overpowers him and tags Coco, who comes in with a dropkick and then fucks with both Islanders cleaning house. Dynamite's back in as Bobby frets on the apron. Dynamite runs into a kick as Jesse says Heenan looks like a Chinaman. So there you go. Bobby tags in and lands a few kicks and clubs and then tags right back out. Jesse says Bobby looks like the cook on Bonanza, who of course is Hop Singh, who is the Chinaman that Jesse was trying to name earlier, as he tags in Tama, who batters Dynamite, who Gorilla says looks to be back to being 100%. Dynamite gets his knees up on a dive and tags Coco, who runs through the Islanders until Haku levels him with a clothesline. The Islanders and Bobby all take turns beating on Coco as Jesse mocks Jack Tunney. Coco comes back and slings Bobby to the post and then dances until ship breaks down. All six battle in the ring. Tama slams Coco on the Islanders and put Hop Singh up and slam him down onto Coco for the win. After the match, Matilda chases down and mauls Bob in the aisle. This was a fun match. Decent action, good pace. The finish was classic, too. And I thought Bobby really carried the action with his bits. It was a bit disappointing when you look at all the talent that's in there. Like, Bobby King is a good comedy guy. Coco, the Bulldogs, and Islanders are all great, you know, really good wrestlers. So I thought it was actually a little disappointing in a way, but it was fine enough for this show. And at 2.5, it's one of the best matches on the night. John, what did you think of this one?
Did you guys catch that? Bobby threw like a vicious knee at Coco, and Coco either spit out a gum or lost a tooth.
So. Yeah, he got him pretty good. He cracked him.
Yeah, but to me, what stuck out was look like that poor dog looked like he was tortured. The poor dog looked exhausted. His tongue was rolling all over the ground, and at the end, it was kind of when Bobby was running away. Bobby had to like trip himself, and Dynamite had to kind of like drag Matilda and throw Matilda on top of Bobby. That poor dog was exhausted. It looked like Criscolo after the end of that basketball game.
Oh yeah, no shit, huh?
We chased Lady Luck till we finally struck Bonanza. With a gun and a rope and a hat full of hope, we planted our family tree.
That's a rough one. I mean, that is 1988 up and down. Jesse called him the Chinaman.
And also, Jesse had a good one. He says, Matilda's probably going to use the ring post for you know what. That poor handler had to follow Matilda around. They didn't really emphasize, but they kind of snuck her in there because they had that handler around to make sure Matilda didn't drop a deuce or whatever. I guess that was to keep Peter satisfied. Poor Matilda.
Poor Matilda. But anyway, I gave this, let's see, your time of this gem. Is the hockey match, by the way, was 6:43. This match was 7:28. I mean, it was actually one of the bigger storylines for the last couple of months. Bobby and the Animals and big spot for the Islanders because, as we said earlier, the rest of the tag teams, other than our tag teams that we're going to see in a couple minutes, we're all thrown in the battle royal. So obviously the Islanders is a heel team. I mean, the Bulldogs are the Bulldogs. Obviously they were the crux of this because of the dog, but the Islanders obviously were still thought of pretty highly if they were actually in the only other match that had tag teams in it. So good get here for the Islanders. Fun match. 2 stars. And Bobby just, he's just so funny. He just knows his thing, you know. And this kind of begins Bobby's slow rise out of the doldrums because, I mean, Bobby's the best manager just entertainment-wise, but obviously we always goof with credentials, and technically in terms of gold, it had been Jimmy Hart that was the most successful manager, and Bobby just had all the guys we liked. But this begins the slow rise of Bobby into literally the top manager in the whole company starting from here. His quest to take out Hogan kind of ended at WrestleMania 3. That was his big thing for what, almost 2 years. That's been transitioned off now. So now he's handling, you know, tag feuds and mid card feuds, and we'll see a lot of that over the next year. And it just was a fun match. It was funny, you know. I don't know. I haven't decided if I think the Bulldogs have been cooked yet. I know we kind of talked about it at the end of 87. I don't know if
Hop Singh
totally
is here,
yet.
So they could be cooking the dogs.
Well, they could be cooking the Hop Singh. But yeah, I mean, a fun match. The right team went over. The right six man team went over because the Islanders, I think, are a little hotter right now. So there you go. Which brings us, JR. Let's see. Do we go back
Vanna and the billboard again?
Legendary Bob. Yeah, we stay in the arena where the Fink introduces Jesse Ventura. He gets up on the balcony and poses to a big pop in his big moment of recognition. Then DiBiase comes all the way down to the ring just to get acknowledged for his bye to the finals. So we then go to the ring for our only semifinal match, and that is Randy Savage and One Man Gang. What a spot for the Gang and Slick here. Just a win away from the title match. Savage and Liz march out next, decked out in black. Gorilla thinks Savage is probably getting tired. Jesse gives Gang the advantage. Gang mauls Savage to start, shoving him around the ring. Uses his speed to stick and move, and uses Gang's beard to snap him across the top rope. Gang overpowers him, clubs and chokes away. Gang gets a pair near falls, but whiffs on the 747 and then comes up empty on the avalanche. Savage jabs away and then kicks Gang to the floor with an axe blow. Savage heads up top and hits another axe, and back inside Gang blocks a slam and chokes Macho. Slick messes with Liz, which gets the ref tied up. Slick then goes to the other side and hands his cane to Gang, who he tries to use it on Savage, but Macho keeps dodging him. The ref turns and sees and calls for the DQ. What a shock, as Gang then breaks the cane on Savage's back. Gang and Slick then start hugging for some reason in the middle of the ring, and Savage goes up and hits an axe blow, and Gang flops on top of Slick in the best spot of the match. Macho survives again and moves to the final. This was all over the place. A little bit of focus in there. And the finish is fucking terrible. Like, why can't Gang lose this clean or count out after Savage hits the axe? The way they do it is so dumb. Why would Gang, in the biggest match arguably of his career right now, take a cane and just start stumbling around the ring trying to hit Savage? Like, it just makes him look so stupid again. And Savage just makes Savage look lucky. Like, he didn't do anything. Like, only Gang being a moron in this big match is why Savage won. If you don't want to pin Gang, just go outside. Savage hits him with the axe. Gang hits the post or hits the railing and falls on Slick, and they get counted out. Like, just do that. You know, and then at least Savage looks like he led to the win. I don't think it's helped either guy. I went one star for a couple of the bumps, and the hug bump is funny. But again, our eighth shit finish of the night on this card out of 14 so far. Just not good. And the match itself is just nothing. So again, disappointing on Savage's big night. What did you think, Scott?
One star. again, it was meant. I was expecting One Man Gang more to kind of really, you know, lay into to Savage, and we really didn't get that. 4:11 your match length. I felt like Gang really needed to like really bully him and really lay into him, because he wasn't going to get much time between the end of this match and the final, even though we have one match in between. And instead, it makes Gang like such a putz, you know, like he needed his 105-pound manager's, you know, fucking cane to beat him. I understand protecting Gang, but at this point, you're about to make Savage, you know, this is a big moment for Savage. Why are you protecting the heel? Stop worrying about that shit. Just get Savage the win and move on. If you're trying to make this guy strong, stop worrying about protecting the heels. You know, who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? You could reheat it, to use a terminology you've used the last day. You could reheat the Gang down the line. I mean, really? I mean, like, who fucking cares right now? Just fucking have Savage win and move on. It's almost like they're overthinking it because they need to protect all these people. You know what I mean? Like, you know, put Gang back on the Cindies and have them squash fucking Nelson Velu and all these other losers. And you're fine. Just have Savage win. The fuck? You know? You know what I'm saying, John? Like, why are they making this so hard? Just because he weighs 400 pounds, he's got to do something asinine with a fucking cane? Why can't Savage just beat him?
Well, first of all, they should have announced him as about 380, because all them walks to the ring, he had to at least drop them. And I think even Gorilla was frustrated with the finish, because he ripped on the Gang and saying how stupid he was for getting DQ'd. So even Gorilla was tired of all these finishes. And just the one thing that stuck out at the beginning, Macho had that nice move where he yanked Gang by his beard and clotheslined him off the top rope. That was an original move, and then also a Slick threatened to pimp slap Liz. That was another highlight. But the DQs are getting excessive. I think after a while, Gang was just exhausted, and he said, "I'm out of here," and he grabbed the cane. It had to be that last walk to the ring was unnecessary. That sapped his the last bit of energy he had. And it was time to get a burger.
All right, that's it for the Gang. Backstage, Gene is with Vanna, who's very excited, and heads to the ring for the main event. Gene recaps the tourney and sets the stage for the final. Euchre shows up, but Gene breaks the news that Vanna has left. And Euchre says, it's Vance White, right? He's written him lots of letters. And Gene clears things up for him. So, I don't know. That's kind of a lame payoff to all this, that he doesn't know who Vanna White is. That brings us to our tag title match. Strike Force defends the tag team titles against the really quickly rising Demolition, who have just shot up since Mr. Fuji took over for Luscious Johnny V. Elevation point for Demolition here, too. They worked their way up the ladder over the last year. And now here they are. Jesse's on record. He predicts a Demolition win. Strike Force out to a warm welcome. Jesse says they have to be quick and hit and run in this one to be effective. Smash clubs away viciously on Martel to get things started. Smash catches Martel in a crossbody. Tito comes in and drop kicks his partner onto the challenger. Things break down from there into a brawl between everyone. Strike Force takes out Smash with a double team clothesline, and Jesse argues that the ref shooting count falls after double teams. Smash buries a knee on Tito and tags out, but Tito works Axe's arm as he comes in. Jesse thinks they need to double up where they can, as Gorilla doubts the Boston Crab can work in this one. Martel and Smash are back in, and Ricky controls with a big slam. The champs quick tag and work the arm, but Smash catches a leaping Tito, and Axe crushes him with a clothesline as he's hoisted up. The challengers get to work double-teaming and pounding Tito, grabbing near falls. So Jesse says Tito's wishing he was back selling tacos in Tijuana. The long heat segment goes on until Tito catches Axe with his head down, but he escapes. Tito comes back and catches Axe with a flying forearm, which Jesse says he learned in the Mexican Football League, the MFL. Martel finally gets a tag and comes in hot, clearing out the champs with a flurry. Martel gets Smash in the Crab, but the ref eventually gets tied up with Tito and Fuji, allowing Axe to grab the cane and break it across Martel's neck. Martel crumples to the mat, and Smash falls on top for the win and the huge pop. I mean, just a huge pop, one of the biggest of the night. Solid tag title match with good heat segment, lots of power offense on Strike Force. It was kind of dismantled here, really. Demolition gets the huge win in the straps after dominating the champs, and they get their run off to a hot start. The Strike Force era is seemingly over for now. I went 2.5 on this. I thought it was a great moment. Demolition's clearly ready. The crowd's behind them, and I thought it was great to have them just come out here and just pick Strike Force apart. You're clearly kind of done with Strike Force. Let Demolition just maul them, and that's what they did, and the crowd was into it, and they just looked like stars. So I thought this was a really well-done match and finish. And to my point earlier, I think if you put this earlier in the night, you get an even better reaction. Like, by this point, everyone's kind of burnt. You have back-to-back big matches now. I would have put the Battle Royal here with the Warrior cleaning everyone out and had Demolition after the first round win the tag title. So what do you think of those points, John, and what do you think of the match?
The crowd popped because they were happy to finally see a pinfall.
All right, that's it.
Yeah, that's really the main thing, yeah.
But, yeah, I agree. The card placement was before the main event. You need something cooler. They would learn that in later years. But to have this right before the world title match was a rough back-to-back. But Tito brings out the best or the worst in Jesse with the MFL line and tacos and Tijuana. It's just priceless Jesse. And for the third WrestleMania in a row, Tito is the shittiest partner around. For three WrestleManias in a row, he distracted the refs and causing his partner to get pinned. We saw it in 2, 3, and now 4. So Tito and tag teams don't go together. Maybe better luck in the MFL.
I don't know who was worse in that stretch, Orndorff or Jesse. Jesus, God.
Yeah, no, Jesse's brutal. That's a funny line, though.
Jesse's ridiculous. 2.5 for me. Your match time is 8 minutes even. By the way, go to placebnation.com. You can check out our written Vintage Vault refresh of this show. The grades may be a little different, but the comments are still great. And check it out if you want to follow along with the written while you're listening. This was the one time. Now, why isn't – here's a good question. Strikeforce wasn't protected here. They got the fucking shit beat out of them. Yeah, there was cheating, but Demolition were heels. It's typical right. WWF fare. But they didn't need protecting. What were we going to have they got the shit beat out of them. It wasn't – sure, they didn't lose clean, but they got fucking mauled. They got mangled. And they should have. Demolition's a better team. They're more marketable. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just what it is. I don't understand why guys like One Man Gang had to be protected, but we let Tito and Martel get the fucking crap kicked out of them, even if there was the slight cheating at the end. I wouldn't even have bothered with the cheating. I would have thought outside the box and just let Demolition win clean. Just let him fucking murder him and move on. I just don't get it. This was perfect. Demolition was the more marketable team. They were the better team. They were the team you were looking ahead with. There's no problem with that. You know, we don't need to, quote, protect Strikeforce. I mean, the fuck, you know, it's Tito. He's both guys are kind of, you know, not bulletproof. I guess that's not really a term for that era. But, I mean, they were fine. I mean, it's Tito. Tito loses matches. Whoop-de-fucking-do.
Well, no,
it's,
I mean, this is like Tito. A changing of the guard match. So, like, I think they knew that. Like, it made sense to have Strikeforce get wrecked. So, I like that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. It had to happen. It had to happen that way. Pure and simple. You know? And, you know, it just seemed, you know, perfect that this happened. Demolition is just a cool looking team. And you know, as much as we talk about the Federation era and we talk about goody goody things, fans didn't mind having kind of a renegade, kind of an edgy kind of team that was a little different than your typical heel goofball team or, you know, like the Islanders or something, or a babyface team. Demolition seemed very – and I know we always get into the discussion. I always talk to Dr. G about this all the time about, you know, Road Warrior knockoffs and all that kind of nonsense. But the fact remains is for the WWF, I mean, this was a very cutting-edge team. When was the last time you had really a cutting-edge heel team? I mean, Murdoch and Adonis fucking throwing beer cans at that asshole Chief J. Strongbow? I mean, maybe that was the last kind of renegade heel team.
Maybe the Foreign Legion a little bit, but yeah. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit, the Foreign Legion. But, I mean, Demolition is just a special kind of team that fans are connecting with because they're different. They're kind of mysterious. They're an enigma. And we don't have that kind of thing in the Federation era. So have them go out there and pull the ripcord and have them slaughter Tito and Martel. They'll bounce back. It's Tito and Martel. They're great workers. Fans love them. They'll move on. And then that goes back to the same thing with Gang. Just have Savage beat him. I don't get it. All this fucking protecting tonight. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. 7 million DQs. I mean, come on. You know, why don't you have – I understand. I mean, Beefcake should have won clean anyway, but – I could sort of see that if you're trying to protect Honky. Why, I don't know, but I don't know. And again, we don't want to discount the fact that Demolition won and they're the World Tag Team Champions, and we kind of have a new era, like you said, changing the guard, JR, and a new era for the tag division, because the tag division is going to really get amped up now over the next, you know, 6 months. We see some kind of the dead weight float away, and now we have this new team, and I don't know. Do you guys think – I mean, obviously hindsight for you, JR, but because you weren't watching live. But, John, let me ask you first, and then, JR, kind of your thoughts thinking back. Did you even think that at that moment eventually these guys were going to be baby faces? I remember very vividly thinking that in my friend's living room, saying these guys are going to get cheered eventually. I could see them turning or fans kind of liking them more than a typical heel team. I even thought it back then. Were you watching it live? Did you even think that these guys were going to turn quick?
That was definitely one of the biggest pops, because at that time it was strictly babyface and heel, and the crowd, you know, cheered accordingly like robots. So that was really one of the first times where a heel wrestler got a big pop for winning the belt. Yeah, that really stuck out. Yeah, I definitely agree. That's where they were headed.
Yeah, you know anything, JR? Like they knew that eventually Demolition was going to be the big babyface team, so they were kind of with all these teams coming in throughout the year, we'd have a completely different. I mean, looking ahead when we get to Survivor Series, obviously the tag match is going to look 10 times different than the one in '87 did. Do you think that they even knew then that eventually these guys were going to be babyfaces, even at this point, that maybe that was the thought that they would eventually turn?
I don't know if that it might be around here when they started seeing that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know for sure yet, because they go with Fuji, who's a pretty big heel. I guess it'll be interesting to see how it plays out over the summer, honestly, to see who they program them with and how things start to play. I don't know. Maybe they saw them long term, but I don't know if they expected it to be anytime soon when they made this title change.
Plus, when you factor in the entrance music was one of the best. Their theme,
right?
Well, I mean, when you start factoring that in,
right? You'd have to be pretty dumb to look at them and not think they're going to get over at some point, right? So, all right, the Fink brings out all the celebrities, and that is Robin Leach, Bob Uecker, and Vanna White. And Jesse has an awesome side bit here. He goes, "Why is this character, meaning Uecker, Mr. Baseball? When I think of baseball, I think of why is it Mr. Baseball, Willie Mays, or Mickey Mantle?" I thought that was really funny bit by Jesse. I just love how he sells him this character. All right, so main event time, the championship finals from the tournament, and that is Randy Savage taking on Ted DiBiase. The long road brings us here, as DiBiase's master plan B has gotten him to the finals with Andre by his side. Savage and Liz now wearing white as they head out for the fourth and final time. Savage gets off to a hot start, peppering DiBiase, but twice Andre trips him behind the ref. DiBiase works the arm, but Savage twists that around, and DiBiase shoots Macho to the corner, lays in some strikes and a clothesline for two. Savage comes back with right hands and a clothesline for two as Ted rolls away to chat with Andre. DiBiase catches Savage with a knee and goes back to his clubs and kicks. Savage battles again, but clotheslines Ted over the top rope and then drives him out with a knee. Savage goes up top, but Andre blocks DiBiase and Savage gives up on that. Macho confers with Liz as she heads to the back to go get some help, maybe? DiBiase cracks Macho from behind and lays in some fists for two. Ted grabs a chin lock and reemerges as Liz reemerges with Hulk Hogan to a big swell of cheers. Hogan grabs a chair and sits ringside as Ted starts to get worked up over what's going on. DiBiase keeps his focus and clubs away, and Andre lands a shot too, but Hogan comes over in a real fun moment and rattles the giant with a shot. Savage comes back with elbows, but DiBiase cuts him down, hits a suplex and a gut wrench for two. Ted goes up, but Savage slams him down and heads up for the elbow, but DiBiase dodges it in a great tease. Ted grabs the $1 million dream, and the ref ties up with Andre. Hogan comes in and whacks Ted with a chair to break up the hold. Savage heads up and hits the elbow for the win and huge pop to cap off his all-time classic night. Jesse says the victory's tainted thanks to Hulk Hogan as the Hulkster chases off DiBiase and Andre with a chair. I thought this was a good match, but it was kind of paint by numbers, but it had the heat with it. Hogan gets his revenge for Indianapolis, but it does a bit make it like Savage needed help. But I think it's fine here because you have Andre at ringside and it's clearly 2-on-1. It's not like Savage couldn't beat DiBiase on his own. You know, Andre's playing a big role in that. Plus he's wrestled four times. So I'm actually okay with it. And Hogan, you know, we mentioned earlier, starting to do heelish things, but at this point you kind of feel for him because he got fucked in Indianapolis. He got fucked earlier and it's pretty much just him getting payback on Andre. Savage has an epic night. He's crowned champion after the long, well-defined and earned journey. An iconic image and moment, him with the title with Liz on his shoulder, and a great payoff to his face turn. I went 3 stars on this main event, Scott.
This was an incredible ending. I loved everything about this match. 3 stars, and just everything about it was perfect. It's talked all night about how DiBiase had the plan perfectly laid out. Andre was now the muscle. He didn't care about the belt anymore. He just wanted to get paid. He wanted to stick it to Hogan and everybody else. And finally, Savage has had enough of this bullshit. We get the little whisper in the thing, and she runs up the ramp. And I don't think any other venue could have done what this camera shot did, because you have the wide shot up the ramp, and you have the ring. And you look up the ramp, and then you see Hogan going through the curtain and down the. No other arena would have been able to do that for some, because Trump, you know, the convention center was flat. You were able to get kind of that easy up camera shot, which was perfect, perfect storytelling right there. Great job by Kerwin or fucking Bucktooth Dunn or whoever the hell was in charge. Perfect shot right there to do that. The story was great. The match was great. You finally have two guys, and we saw it on Saturday's main event, and we obviously will clearly not see the last of these two. And it just worked out great.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great story. I was pumped. You know, me being a Hulkamaniac at the time, John can relate to this. It was odd to see somebody else as world champion, because as long as I've been – I mean, for the small stretch when I was 10 years old and Backlund was champ for like 5 months before, the Hulkamania started in 84. But for the most part, for most of my fandom, Hogan was champion. So like the rest of us, we drank the Kool-Aid. And yeah, it felt weird, but I think I understand the whole, Savage needed the stage to himself. But I get this a little bit more than I do the whole posing for 20 minutes after you fucking lost or, whatever. Because we as fans needed Hogan to tell us he's okay. Cheer him. It's okay. He's a Hulkam. He's one of us. So psychologically, it's fine that the guy that we've been cheering for the last 4 years, the guy that's had the belt around his waist and everything was good in that aspect, is telling us, look, I didn't win, but this guy didn't. He's okay. He's okay. We can cheer him. He's the champion now. We should all respect that. And I applaud that. So I, as much as for years we used to think, oh, he's siphoning off the heat, he wasn't. What he was doing was he was telling all of us fans, Savage is okay. We could trust him as champion. Obviously, the story would go other paths, which is awesome. But for now, the number one babyface is telling us this guy's okay. We can cheer him. And that needed to happen. It needed to be done. So the story was fantastic. The match was fantastic. I think we were fatigued because the fucking show was so long. In case you didn't really notice, for those that want to watch it on the network, the actual runtime, and we're talking, I mean, for 1988 standards, it was 3 hours and 33 minutes and like 20 seconds or something, which, you know, now is nothing since Mania Now is like fucking 5 hours. But
that's Raw. It's like, you know,
I know, yeah, pretty much. But for 1988 standards, you're like, holy shit, 3.5 hours. And it did have some fatigue. But in the end, we all felt good because our hero is telling us this guy's okay. So you turned – the show went off the air and you were in – and I was in – you know, I was in my buddy's living room. We were hanging out and I said, you know what? We're good. I'm pumped. My guy didn't win, but that's okay because he's letting – he says that it's okay to root for this guy. So from a kayfabe perspective, I think the storytelling was perfect, John. And as a fan, a Hulkamaniac, which obviously 90% of us were, to be told it's okay to root for this other guy with the sunglasses and the cool tights and everything – I felt good when we went off the air, and I think that was the whole point of having him out there at the end.
And also in this instance, the crowd called for it. After Andre tripped Macho the second time, there was a large the crowd. There was a large Hogan chant. So the crowd called for it too, and Liz went back there to get him. So it wasn't like Hulk was in one of the few cases where he wasn't overbearing, and you know he had to be coaxed to come out. So that made it all okay. But it's interesting. I had referred to it before that Hebner was the ref here, and after all the shenanigans, Gorilla and Jesse, I guess they got directions, but they never even mentioned it. So it was weird that after
right the whole thing
they made a big deal. You know, like I said before, they made a big deal with Morella missing the count in three, and here with the twin refs, and now they kind of ignored the refs altogether and they went away for it. So I just found that a little bit. Like, oh, okay, they tried some scam with the twins, but now we're just going to put them back in there. And, as we'll see later down the road when they reinstate Danny Davis. Sorry for any spoilers. but still, it was weird after – I mean, this is prime time for me, and it was just Hogan being the champ. Was just that was the routine. So, so for me, this is a big adjustment at the time. So it still took a lot getting used to, but they did it as we discussed it in the build show. They did it as best way possible. I mean, we tried to rebook it, and even though the match, the quality of the match is getting there, and a couple decisions here and there with DQs and pins didn't. It can be argued and can be changed around, but eventually this main event worked out perfectly, I think.
I agree, Johnny. I think it worked out the best it could have. Like you said, we tried to rebook it, and I think we just kind of said, all right, you know what? In the end, it didn't really matter. In the end,
Jesse kept up his tradition. He said he again threatened to come out of retirement.
Right.
Yeah.
But so Randy Savage is the new world champion. The tournament is over. The storyline's over. We'll look on to greener pasture. So WrestleMania 4 in the books. Why don't we go ahead and do our awards so we can wrap this puppy up. All right. So let's start things off here with our match of the night. So I went with the main event. It's the only match I believe I had at 3 stars, and that is Savage versus DiBiase.
No doubt.
Yeah,
no
I agree. Doubt. I agree. No
Which again talks about how sad, sad state of the grades on the show and the match quality. Like I think that was the only match at a 3. You know, there's a couple 2.5s I had, and the rest is all just garbage.
Out of 16 matches, yeah. it's not a good batting average. Even worse than Yuka's batting average.
I had 3.5, and 3, and the rest is all 1.5 or lower. So not good.
It's like Cowboy shooting percentage average week.
And it also was a 500 average for shit finishes. 8 out of 16 bad finishes. So. All right, the Cousin Jr., our worst match of the night. I went with Warrior Hercules. I think Gang Bigelow was in the conversation, but Warrior Herc to me was the bigger disappointment, given what Warrior should have been. We've seen Hercules have good matches before, especially with the power stuff. I just expected a lot more out of this, and I was pretty disappointed in it.
I concur.
Yeah, it's hard to really shit on any of the tournament matches because the whole point was to fucking move the thing along, so I don't think they gave a crap whether it sucked or not, but... I agree with you on Warrior Hercules. That needed to have a better showcase, and it didn't. It didn't work.
B for Hockey could. That could be contender.
That could be close. I think this was worse though.
It was. Yeah. All right, the Hogan Award for the MVP. I mean, to me, it's a pretty easy call. Unless not, Randy Savage. It's his night.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. 4 matches, 4 hosses, 4 different kinds of wrestlers. It worked perfectly.
The different costumes, the appearance, just everything about him to me. It's just, this is his night.
I'm going to go left a little and go with DiBiase. And I especially like the Morocco match where he came out on his own and did his thing. So I think you needed that heel. You needed that heel to put Macho.
No, I agree. It's in the conversation. I mean, I think it's either way you could go or both, whatever you want. But no, DiBiase definitely was a huge part of the night as well. They own the whole show, the two of them. All right, next up we had the Uncle Elmer, which is the loser, the worst guy on the show. I went with Warrior. It hurt, but I thought he was the least prepared. I thought he looked bad in a night where he should have looked good. You know, a few others like Honky didn't look great. Bigelow had a tough night. And like a normal choice, like a George Steele, didn't really do much. I just thought Warrior was the guy who had the most to gain and ended up just punting the whole night.
Again, he had a bigger spotlight, and he failed. Unfortunately, fortunately, he gets another chance, but on this night he flopped.
I'm going with Bravo or we're tied with Matilda.
All right, hang on, I gotta go back in and add that in. All right, up next is our Best Moment Award, Best Moment of the Night. I went with Savage winning the title, him hitting the big elbow and being crowned and walking around with Liz. I mean, to me, that's the iconic image of this whole show and what it's all built toward, and I thought they executed it really well.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the similar Hulk nail and Teddy with the chair. Unfortunately, Hogan gets it again, but I'm going to go with that move.
Yeah, no, Savage winning, it's a monumental moment because for the first time in the Federation era, for the first time in the new era of professional wrestling, at least in this company, somebody else is at the top, babyface-wise, and it's a big deal. Big deal.
All right, the Morocco Award for the biggest juice ahead of the night. I think the namesake takes it for me, Donnie Morocco.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Back where he belongs in the holding this award. Him and Hogan have alternated it since January. Hogan, Morocco, yes. Morocco, Hogan, Morocco, Hogan, Morocco.
I think it's gonna be permanently his award, I think.
Until he's done.
He's boosting up a lead there.
That's it. All right. And then our new award, the Kempetero Award for the worst hair of the night. I won Kempetero for the third straight show.
Yeah,
he wins it.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. He's gonna get it until he's gone. Yeah. And they'll have to find some other schlub with lousy hair. Yeah. The perm was going crazy.
Kenny.
All right, yep. And finally, our grade of the evening out of 10. There's still some nostalgia baked into this thing. The wrestling itself is not good. The booking is questionable. The finishes are terrible. But there's still just enough here to again, even though we watched it a bunch, like I didn't hate watching it, you know. Like, and I've talked about it now a couple times. Talked about it with Jeff a few weeks ago. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10. Obviously that's a shit score when you consider it's a pay-per-view, it's a WrestleMania. But I don't think it's like complete dog shit. Like some of the real bad MSGs we've seen, like there's still enough in there. You get the commentary, which is entertaining. So there's bits and pieces, but I think I wanted to give it a grade that represents that it's disappointing on a Mania scale. So that's why, you know, I'd knock it back down. So I think four kind of fits the middle ground of what I've been thinking about it.
Yeah, I'll go with 4.5 because it expertly set up the title picture for years to come. And it got the belt off Hogan in the best way possible. And also the tag match. But basically the last two matches brought it to a 4.5. Not a total disaster, but close mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah, I'll give this a 4.2. I didn't hate it as much. I'll never really hate it overall, but it's very hard to grade it really high compared to other shows and other WrestleManias. The overall quality wrestling wise is not good, and you know, a lot of the match decisions, a lot of the match decisions are lousy. But we do have a new champion, which is really special. And we have new tag team champions, which is also very special, another different kind of team. So some of the booking decisions were good, but unfortunately the show could have probably been condensed in 3.5 hours, a bit much. So
yeah, agreed.
Can't go much higher than 4.
All right, we're going to wrap things up. We'll be back next week, likely later in the week. We're going to aim for Tuesday. Kelly Nelson making his return. Has been a while since he's joined us, but he's penciled in as we talk about the April 88 MSG house show. So the fallout from WrestleMania. There's a lot of rematches from this night on that show. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll have a 4th of July week off, Scott. We'll be back 2 weeks after that. So since we've last talked, it was a Jeff Learns Wrestling. We talked WrestleMania 4, which is a nice synergy. We've had a break on Wrestling Warzone. Chad was on vacation and then sick, but we're hoping to return this week. Looking at, believe, the October 9th, I think, episode of TV. We're in there somewhere. So check that out. We have our own Facebook page. If you just search Wrestling Warzone, excited about that. And also, Aaron and I had a hell of a week. We banged out 3 installments of Made the Cut and finished our lists for the GWE. And my favorite part of the whole thing is, on this newest one, we did our top 14 and wrapped things up. It was the 1-year anniversary of Aaron and I's first pod blast to kick off the GWE project. So 1 year to the next, we finished. So I thought
nice.
I thought that was some cool synergy. So that's done on our end. We'll be working together, him and I, as we work through the tag team stuff as well. So look for content from us there.
Spoiler, they both had SD Jones in the top 10.
Can you believe it?
That's right. Damn straight.
Well-deserved. awful. Of course, be sure to check out PlaceMation.com. We have some good written pieces up over the last few days. We had a team review, a staff review of Money in the Bank. We had 5 or 6 of us all kind of reviewed a match. So I thought it was a cool way to do it. You get some different perspectives. So check that out. That was up earlier today, as well as a reaction show with Chris and Devin, too. So all that, plus much more, PlaceMation.com. Scott, anything you want to plug?
We will have a new main event this week. We'll talk Sunday's Money in the Bank and what's going on tonight, and our newest New Japan Classic match pick, Tatsumi Fujinami versus the Dynamite Kid from February of 1980. And then next week, Nate and I will conclude our series with our final top 10 of our GWWE list as well. So that'll be coming up. So regular main event this week and the final installment of our series next week.
And a fun game to play is see how many people in your top 10 are in everyone else's bottom 10. So that's a good one.
Exactly. Yep.
Oh, check that out.
Means it's special and there's all a variety. Yeah, we're not all cookie cutter here.
Very special. So, all right, check that out. And, of course, plenty more to come. Like I said, PlayStation.com. And maybe sniffaroo of a new tournament coming, too. We've been talking. Keep your eyes peeled and your ears open. Twitter, place number 2BNation, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation each and every day. Shop with us, PlaceToBeNation.com, PlayStation. PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon, and download our free ebooks on the right hand side of the site as well. So for Johnny D, that's Scotty C. I'm JT. We're out. Talk to you next week. Maybe. I'm going to miss you. I'm out. Goodbye.
Silvano Rules.
Mozambique.